10 o'clock, what did I say? 7 o'clock. Well, it's nearly Christmas. I'm ready for a holiday. I don't know about anybody else. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. I just got edited by Nick Ferrari for the first time, I think. Fantastic. Thank you. Send me an invoice. I saw two stories this morning that I spotted a link in, and I was quite pleased to see the link. I like links. And then I spotted a third, and then I spotted a fourth. Four stories that speak to something similar. One about David Lammy's proposal to wipe the juvenile criminal records that you've been hearing about this morning. Another about the number of people arrested who turn out to have ADHD. One about Britain's youth unemployment, and the other about youth clubs.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, health officials have warned the NHS is facing a worst-case scenario of flu cases. Latest figures for England show more than 2,600 patients were in hospitals with the illness each day last week. That is a 55% increase on the previous 7 days, with a similar sharp spike in norovirus. Dr. Bharat Pankhania is a public health expert at the University of Exeter.
We have a early start to the seasonal influenza season. Furthermore, we have a mismatch between the vaccine and the circulating virus. And as a result of that mismatch, there is reduced protection.
Resident doctors are considering an offer aimed at ending months of strike action in England. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting's fresh deal includes an expansion of training posts, but no movement on pay. Medics who will vote on the deal in the coming days are due to walk out for 5 days from next Wednesday. The homelessness ministers told LBC that no children should be housed in B&Bs. Alison McGovern set out a new £3.5 billion strategy, including a promise to stop children growing up in temporary accommodation.
The figure that I am most bothered about as I'm sat here talking to you is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years. And if we do nothing else, we have to reduce that number.
The plan also includes a target to cut long-term rough sleeping by half in 5 years. The White House has released footage of US troops storming an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. Officials say it was carrying sanctioned oil, but it marks another sharp escalation in tensions between the countries. The US has carried out a series of deadly strikes on drug traffickers in the Caribbean in recent weeks. The former Conservative MP Ben Bradley has defected to Reform UK. The party says Mr. Bradley, who lost his seat last year, will become its head of local government action. And the winners of the first ever Global Player Awards have been announced. The news agents won Best Podcast Show. Christian Amanpour presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, picked up the biggest new podcast. You can see the full list of winners on Global Player. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 10 points at 96.66. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places this morning, then becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
I think we're up to five. I think I've got five stories now that are all very current and all speak to something similar. I like that phrase. Is it one of the ones you hate? You know, when language changes ever so slightly and you haven't noticed why until you suddenly notice and you think that you dislike it because it's new. Because we all hate new things, remember? Especially when you get older, you hate new things. And then you stop and think about it, and you quite like it. And I've caught myself using this one quite a lot in ways that I never would have used 10 years ago. It speaks to. So an idea speaks to an event speaks to an idea. So these are five stories, all speak to something similar. They speak to the same theme. Hard to pin down. I really like that turn of phrase. I realise, and I make no apologies to you if you hate it. I will convert you. I promise. But it may take time. But there are five stories in the news this week, mostly today, partly yesterday, that all, to me, seem to speak to something quite similar. You have David Lammy proposing to wipe juvenile criminal records. You have Lisa Nandy speaking of the violent indifference that youths have faced for years. You have youth unemployment in the UK rising faster at the moment than anywhere else in the G7. The figures are heartbreaking. We've done a lot on this sort of subject lately, but the evidence continues to amass up to about 15%. From about 11 in the key category. So you've got the youth clubs that Lisa Nandy is keen to resurrect. You've got the criminal records that David Lammy is keen to excise. You've got the youth unemployment that statistics tell us is rising faster than in any other G7 country. And then the two stories that are not immediately part of the same pattern, but which I think very much are. We begin with the possibility, it is only that because these things are rather hard to pin down, but the possibility that about half of people arrested at any given time may have ADHD, may be on that particular spectrum. And the final one, oddly, is the social media ban that has come in Australia now, and which we have also talked about earlier this week. And what do they all have in common? Elements of it are fairly obvious, but let me try and paint you a picture. Let me try and plot a spider's web of how these five stories are interlinked and interwebbed, if that's even a word. Some of it's quite obvious. If you are caught young enough and provided with some inspiration and or guidance that you are not finding anywhere else, most obviously at school or at home. And that might be partly through an unfortunate set of circumstances or dereliction of duty, or it may just be bad luck. You know, it might be that you derive enormous pleasure from team games and you can't really get into team games at home and your school has sold its playing fields. I'm clicheing slightly, but it might not be evidence of deprivation or poverty or lack of privilege. It might just be bad luck. The point is that a youth club, can provide you with something that inspires you for the rest of your life. At the moment, at 10:07, that's probably going to be the basis of my first question to you this morning. But that, it would seem to me, makes you less likely to go off the rails later. If you have ADHD, then you become measurably more likely to go off the rails later. That's a question we may be looking into later, the question of why that is. For those of us who don't really understand, it would be very helpful for those of us that do to simply explain why we think the incidence of people in prison disproportionately reflects people believed to have or likely to have ADHD. So those two things are fairly obvious. The social media ban plays into this because what are they supposed to do now that they're not on social media all day? I don't know that anybody really clings to the notion that social media, particularly for teenagers, has been an unalloyed good. You know, oh, I don't know what everybody's talking about. It's fantastic. You don't even get the sort of myopic self-interest perspective on this when people argue that, well, it didn't do me any harm, therefore it can't possibly be doing anybody else any harm either. It's a helpful trope if you're a right-wing newspaper columnist, but it doesn't seem to make much sense anywhere else in the human race. Well, it hasn't affected me, therefore it must not exist. Imagine saying that about flu. Imagine being in the middle of a flu epidemic, as we are at the moment, and finding someone who hasn't got flu and therefore is convinced that everybody else is faking it or everybody else is making it up or indeed that flu doesn't exist. I'm not even joking because we kind of had that during COVID, didn't we, in many ways, when the stakes were so much higher. But we all kind of agree that teenagers' access to social media is more bad than good. And we all kind of hope that Australia's ban on access to some of these platforms for under-16s works. We're really keeping a very, very close eye on that in the hope that it will work. But it speaks to the youth clubs and to a lesser extent to the ADHD because, of course, what will people do? Especially perhaps people with short attention spans. What will young people do now that their access to social media faces possible closure? Number four, I think, is obvious. David Lammy wants to wipe the records of people who committed crimes in their youth. Now, It's actually probably the least tangential, or the most tangential of these five stories, the one that sits a little bit apart from the other four, because this isn't about preventing offences. If you're going to a youth club, if you're being gainfully engaged by other issues, then if you've got a job to bring the youth unemployment into it, then you are less likely to commit a crime. So that element of it is obvious, but the actual removal of records, the excising of a record, doesn't speak directly to the other four issues, but it certainly tangentially does. It's part of the same picture of doing more to help people, particularly young people, albeit that Lammy's proposals would help people of almost any age. And then I think the most obvious one of all, youth unemployment being higher here than anywhere else in the G7, that's partly going to be linked to an absence of vacancies, but it's also going to have something to do with things that have happened and are happening to the relevant cohort. So learning the skills that you need to engage. I love the word mesh, another word that's come up this year. We should keep a closer eye on things, Keith. We should have had a word of the year, shouldn't we? It's too late now. It's the middle of flipping December. I break up next week. But we should have had a word of the year. I like mesh. Someone explained to me, because I talk a lot about the cogs not biting. So one cog is spinning round and another cog is spinning round, or another cog is stationary. It's not spinning round at all. And I talked about you need to find a way of getting that cog to bite that cog. And you told me that the correct word is mesh. Cogs don't bite, they mesh. And when the cogs mesh, the machine works. This is, I think, the most obvious meshing, is that the more engaged young people are, the more inspired they are, the more occupied they are, the more active and proactive they are, then the more likely they are to be employable. But in two ways, both to have attributes that an employer both seeks and desires, but also to have an appetite for work and an understanding of the relationship between work and life that seems to be part of the problem of so-called NEETs. I know what you're thinking. James, this is supposed to be a phone-in, but you know what I'm thinking. You say that every day, and we usually manage to muddle through. So there are five stories. Lisa Nandy's talk of young people facing violent indifference and announcing plans, a national youth strategy designed to engage and interest the most isolated generation. That obviously links into the social media ban, because one of the main reasons why they're so isolated is because of the lure, the siren lure of social media. If a child has ADHD, they're going to be measurably more susceptible to all of these issues. And half of people held by the Met in London over an 8-week period may well have had an undiagnosed attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. This is research from the University of Cambridge, found that about 1 in 20 may have had undiagnosed autism, but by exploring what kind of behaviours these people are displaying and screening for possible neurodivergence, I think everybody, up to and including the researchers, were shocked by what they found. About half of people held by the Met may have had ADHD. They were certainly displaying symptoms or behaviours linked to ADHD. So if you're a kid in that category, you're much more likely to benefit from an explosion, a resurrection of youth clubs, and suffer from the proliferation of social media. And that means you're more likely to end up with a criminal record, which David Lammy this week wants to retrospectively excise. And you are obviously, if you've had involvement with criminal behaviour, whether you've got ADHD or not, you become immediately less employable. So what would you start with if this was your show? I can't really launch five separate phone-ins at 13 minutes after 10 this morning. It doesn't really work. I wish it did. One day it will. I keep trying. I sort of make it even more natural conversation than we are already during the time that we spend together, when it could be you that goes off on a mad tangent, not just me, of five different subjects, all of which seem to speak to similar or linked themes. And yet you can't do five separate phone-ins at the same time. So which one do you start with as a way into the other four? Which of those five stories, Lisa Nandy's youth clubs, ADHD and the Metropolitan Police, social media bans for teenagers, David Lammy's excising of criminal records, and the rise in youth, the unique rise, the world-beating rise in youth unemployment, which one do you start with in order to open doors potentially to the other four? I think it's Lisa Nandy, isn't it? I think it is the curious plight of the most digitally connected, but also the most isolated generation in the history of humanity. Leaving aside questions we've already tackled this week about policing online spaces under new laws and possibly following the Australian lead on a ban, looking at what she plans to do to address it, the Youth Matters plan, backed by £500 million, looking at 500,000 young people and providing them with, and this is important, trusted adult access. Access to a trusted adult outside their home and schools. So 250 new or refurbished youth clubs over the next 4 years. 50 hubs providing access to professional support. Areas of particularly problematic coming to the front of the queue: Birmingham, Nottingham, County Durham, and new support for youth workers. Lisa and Andy said yesterday there's an urgency to this. The most connected and the most isolated generation in history, with a significant of young people who don't feel safe in their daily lives, in no small part because of what is happening online, and England is an outlier. Things are worse here than they are elsewhere. They're bad everywhere, but they're worse here. Some mornings I'd want you to tell me why. Why is England suffering more from this? And when she says England, I don't know if she's misspeaking and she means the United Kingdom, or whether England is measurably worse than Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. But for our purposes today, that's not the question we're asking. Why are we doing worse in this field than other comparable countries and populations? I want to focus instead on the plan, not the problem. And I think the best way to do that, in the very first instance, is not to start with David Lammy, although I like that story. The idea of a millstone or an albatross around your neck that you have to carry for your entire life as a consequence of something you did when you were 13, 14, 15 years old. It's a horrible thing, and yet we will all immediately be able to think of crimes that we don't think should ever be removed from a record. We may get onto that later, but here's what I want to do first. This is on the long, long list of things that I got horribly wrong in the early years of doing this job. I would be talking about anything from knife crime to exam results, and you would call me and you would say, they've shut all the youth clubs, and I would get bored. I would feel my eyes roll, either metaphorically or perhaps in the days before the cameras were in the studio. Actually, my eyes would roll because it seemed to me to be one of those lazy answers to a complicated question. It seemed to me to be a bit like saying, when talking about homelessness, starting to talk about military veterans. And the idea of people who hate immigrants and think that everybody who is Christian in their approach to foreign-born people should fill their own home with refugees never seems to apply to all the people who think they're patriotic and care passionately about homeless former veterans, but never suggest that they should put them up in their own home. Just a hypocrisy, a small hypocrisy. But that kind of simple answer to a complicated question. The tabloidification, if you like, of society. But I don't think it is lazy. I think it's actually one of the great missed opportunities of all the years I've been doing this show. And it's partly because of my background. It's partly because I went to private school. I went to boarding school. Youth clubs do not feature at boarding school because we live in the middle of one. You've got fencing clubs. You've got stamp collecting clubs. You've got school plays. You've got sports teams. You've got tennis courts. In my particular case, at my public school, I always get the giggles when I tell you this and you never believe me. We had a pack of beagles. If that was your thing, if beagling was your thing, then at my school, you could go beagling at the week. I don't know what beagling is. I never went to the trouble of finding out. I imagine you just follow the beagles around the countryside. And when I was 15, I'd have laughed at that. Now it sounds quite fun, as long as they don't go after animals or kill anything. Beagles. We have beagles. You go to a school like mine. And this is relevant, because most of the ruling class does go to schools like mine. Not the current government, but certainly the previous 30. You don't get it. You sit here on your radio show with your big old ego banging away at the microphone and someone rings in and says, well, we've shut all the youth clubs, and you don't know what they're talking about. You don't know what they're talking about because you lived in one when you were a child. You lived in one. Boris Johnson probably had a Latin club at his school. I had fly fishing lessons when I was 10. I thought it would be a way of getting into the headmaster's good books. I didn't even particularly like fishing, but he was obsessed with it, so I signed up for fly fishing lessons in the hope that he might hit me less when I turned up to his history classes. Didn't work. I made a mess of the fly fishing and I carried on getting clattered. But do you see what I mean? If you go to private school, the more privileged you are, the more middle class perhaps you are, the more access you have to all the things that can be filed under youth clubs and which I used to very arrogantly dismiss as a overly simple answer to a complicated question. So, I love this. We should have done this as a separate subject. All the people getting in touch with shock at the things that were provided by their private schools. My girlfriend went to private school and they had a boating lake, James writes Mike, and then repeats for good measure, a boating lake! Mate, that's small fry. Did she have any beagles? Beagles are the gold standard, I think. And an 18-hole golf course that actually had one of the best magic mushroom crops in the north of England, I was told, by people who understand such matters. But let's come at it from the other end. Let's talk about the difference they make. 0345 60 60 973. Just think now, look back, however old you are, and just tell me the difference that it made. The place you could go to that was neither home nor school, that looking back played a much, much bigger role in your life than you realised at the time. Like Lisa and Andy wants to bring them back. We can have a little look at whether or not they're anachronistic, whether or not they will still be fit for purpose, whether they could still make a difference to a generation weaned on social media and screens. But in the first instance, let's just look at why they are such a good idea, why I was so wrong to dismiss them as part of the answer to knife crime, to gang culture, to youth unemployment, to, well, you name it, really. If it's a problem that young people suffer from, youth clubs can be part of the solution, can be part of the answer. I don't care what it was. It doesn't have to have been a specific youth club. I was also in the RAF cadets, would you believe, for a while. But it was part of my school. All the things, I've never clocked this before. All the things my school provided as part of the normal service would, for people at less privileged schools, be extracurricular activities, would be things you had to do either after school or outside school. Utterly normal for people from my educational background. And we shouldn't be part of this conversation. We shouldn't be part of this conversation. You should. Tell me the difference it made. The thing you did outside school or outside the home as a young person, the inspirational figure perhaps, who was neither a teacher nor a parent, but who, looking back, left indelible, profound and entirely positive imprints on your life. What was it? Who was it? Where was it? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
You know what I love about Eurostar? Being able to bring two suitcases and a hand luggage for free. That's why I've packed my entire wardrobe. Literally. I dismantle the flatpack. The nuts and bolts are in my briefcase. I'm trading it for an aquarium. Oh, which reminds me, you can bring a lot of liquid on board too.
Eurostar. Together we go further. Luggage up to 85 centimetres must fit in racks. Restrictions and charges apply. See Eurostar.com.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Sky Sports will play more than 50 Premier League games and the PDC Darts Championship. While over on Sky TV, Amadeus and Sweet Pea Stranger Things is on Netflix.
Get Sky Sports, Sky TV and Netflix for a most wonderful price in time for Christmas. Go to sky.com. Sky, believe in better. Requires Sky Stream and relevant Sky TV subscriptions. Minimum broadband speed of 25 megabits per second recommended. 18 plus.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
And as if to prove my point, just in the little break there, Keith and I were talking. Keith went to a very normal, what I think they would once have called a bog standard comprehensive school. That was a politician's term, and I've checked with him. It does apply. I don't know whether I should share with you the clubs that Keith signed up for, because it might change your image of him. But his school didn't offer much by way of after-school activity, but for reasons that are lost in the mists of time, it did have chess and calligraphy clubs, which I don't imagine were going to draw the biggest the coolest dudes in the school or the biggest rebels. But he just said to me then, I've only just noticed something for the very first time. In the same way I just noticed that my education makes me ludicrously unqualified to talk about normal people at normal schools doing normal things. He just said, I've just realised that the reason why some of the people that were turning up for chess and calligraphy clubs, despite not being the kind of people you might have immediately associated with chess and calligraphy clubs, they were the kids that had nowhere else to go. That they were the kids whose parents wouldn't be in or whose parents wouldn't be cooking them tea. That's a moment, right? That little thing, if you're being sceptical about Lisa Nandy. Who benefits most from this kind of service, this kind of provision? Answer, obviously, the children who need it most. Who needs it most? The children who have least. And who is most likely to end up on a bad path or even on the course to criminality? The children we've just talked about. But you don't have to be one of them. You just have to have a story. You just have to have a memory of the difference that it made. Let's go to Cumbria, which is one of the areas that is on the list, on Lisa Nandy's list of being most in need of help. Gavin is in Dalton-in-Furness. Gavin, what would you like to say?
Yeah, morning, James.
Hello, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Just a quick one on the Beagles. I live that far up north. We didn't have Beagle clubs. We had Whippet clubs.
We could have had pitched battles. Your lot could have been coming.
You like Braveheart. Not mention the Beagles.
What have I let out of the bag now? I like the idea of you'd have your lot coming over the hill with your pack of whippets and my lot in our deer horses and our plus fours all blowing our bugles.
You would have stood no chance against the whippets.
We'd have been over by the end of morning break, mate. We'd have been chased all the way. But anyway, that's not why you rang in.
Another clock. So my point, I spoke to your researcher, and that there's two elements here. There's community centres. So when I was young, I'm 59, in Barrow-in-Furness, it's a population of 65,000.
Right.
Every electoral ward had a community centre.
Gosh.
And they were open most nights, run by volunteers, stroke youth club for the weekends, Saturday afternoons, Wednesday, Thursday, they held things on. We could play table tennis, pool. And it's right what you said. A lot of the kids that went there didn't want to be in the house.
Yeah.
Well, I was brought up in the 80s. There was nothing for me to do in the house.
Mm.
So I went to meet my friends. We met on the corner. We went to the youth club, stroke community centre. Them community centres were all closed down by we know who.
Well, not everyone will, but it's not exactly a missing word around this, is it? They were closed down, I mean, mostly under the Margaret Thatcher, John Major governments, and if there were any left, austerity probably did for them.
Yeah, there's none. I mean, quite ironically, the three of them that I can recall in our town, they're now dominoes.
Gosh.
Which is awful. But they served a purpose. I mean, Dalton-in-Furness has a population of maybe 35,000. We have no library. That was sold and it's now HMO. We've no fire station. We've no police station. The police were walking out of the police station during the day, walking around the town. The fire service used to have open nights, used to have gala days, used to have Christmas events on that was a community event. I think that the bigger word here is community. Community
right.
Centres.
Yeah.
She's talked about youth clubs. Let's not keep blaming the youth that are walking around the streets.
We're not. I'm not blaming the youth. I'm just, in fact, the opposite. No, I don't know that she is. I think she genuinely. I mean, if you're reading her words and listening to her speech, this is coming from the same place that you're coming from. You're just extending it generationally, but she's focusing on youth because you've got to start somewhere. But I do think she's coming from exactly this. She's trying to give them a sense of community that they don't currently have.
Yeah, definitely. But if I was Lisa and Andy, I'd get a task force on board of people my age and older who remembered what these places were and what they could be, what you need to provide. It's all right saying, let's give them a youth club. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and again, don't turn me into a government spokesman. They're not just giving them a youth club. They're talking about professional support. They're talking about access to trusted adults. They're talking about they're defining and specifying the skills that they will be taught and the help that they will receive. But here's a question for you. How, and I am putting myself in the same pot as you, albeit that our experiences are very different. The Whippet and the Beagle. Sounds like a pub, doesn't it? Any the Whippet and Beagle. Have a pint of Best, please. How do we know that we are not suffering from in-my-day-itis? Because this sounds, in many ways, if someone was tuning in, not quite sure what the exact subject matter was, it sounds like two blokes of a certain age insisting that things were much better in our day and kids these days don't know they're born.
Let's take away the kids don't know the bomb. We absolutely are saying that things were better.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Yeah, let's just put it under that heading of community centre and places for youth.
And it speaks to politics. This is where populists thrive. They come in promising to fix things that they are not ever in a million years going to fix. Leaving the European Union doesn't reopen libraries, but it speaks to this malaise that you describe, doesn't it? This notion that things, and at least, no one is going to ring me and say, shut up, community, down with that sort of thing. You're all living in cloud cuckoo land. But I'm keeping that diagnosis in mind, Gavin. I want more reassurance that this is not in my day-itis, that the truths you're describing are obvious and inalienable. Did it make a specific difference to you?
It did. It definitely did, yeah. I mean, it made me the person I am. But being able to form friendships and being outward and confident and yeah,
social capital.
Community centre and talking to adults.
Yeah.
There's some youth. My wife works in a large corporation. She gets young graduates in, they can't use the phone and don't like conversing with people because they've not been brought up around adults and people of authority that they may be scared of and, I can't talk to him, he's the general manager.
Yeah, I find the phones.
Yeah, my opinion is I'll speak to anybody and I believe that that's come from the way I was brought up with my friends, with these places to go and talk by adults.
The more you speak and the more I think, the more that word that runs through British society like Blackpool through a stick of rock starts throbbing in my brain. And that word is class. Because again, a school like mine teaches all of the things. It doesn't even teach them. They're baked in to our daily experience. All of the things that you describe. Interaction with adults, confidence or swagger. As I think Nicholas Soames called it once, didn't he? Or someone called it once when they rang into the programme. And that idea that young people have been accidentally deprived of these things, partly for obvious reasons. We've all done it, stuck a screen in front of them when we could have been doing more interacting. And it's happened on a kind of national level. And partly for economic reasons. It is not a coincidence that Conservatives were in power when most of these things were closed or removed. And it is neither a coincidence, I realise now, that Conservatives, particularly now, but always, to some degree, have been populated by people who went to schools like mine. If you went to a school like mine and you lack empathy, and of course you're taught to lack empathy at schools like mine, then you won't get it. You won't get it. You don't even know what community is because you never didn't have it. You never didn't have it. So what difference does it make in lives where it wasn't baked in? In lives where you didn't actually have all of these opportunities to do all of the things that Gavin has described, to commune with trusted adults, to develop interests and skills that you could not do in the classroom or at home. 10:32 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The number of people in hospital in England with flu remains at a record level for this time of year. It's jumped by 55% in a week, prompting warnings by health officials of a worst-case scenario this December. Resident doctors in England are being balloted on a new offer aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. The proposals to be voted on in the coming days include an expansion of training places. Homelessness charities have warned ministers are falling short of dealing with a crisis in Britain. The government's published a new plan to tackle rough sleeping and stop children being housed in B&Bs. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Waitrose presents £10 Fine Wines.
A special toast to Alice, finally, home for Christmas.
Oh, yeah, welcome home.
Starring Prince Alexander Crémant de Loire, a balance of pear and fresh green apple. Montecillo Rioja Reserva, with notes of forest fruits and spices. And special guest, Carved Aluni Chamacon Luni, bursting with apple blossom and citrus peel.
This is the wine I was telling you about from
French Vineyard. I know.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected licensors subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands at the Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:34 is the time. A little quiz for you. Speaks to some of the subjects we touched on in the last conversation, particularly with the role that lying populists can play in areas where there is a sense of loss, a sense of lack of community. Nigel Farage has just been paid £135,000 by a gold bullion firm, according to an excellent report in Byline Times. Do you think that was in return for 12 weeks' work, 12 days' work, or 12 hours' work? Nigel Farage, the man of the people and the answer to our cost of living crisis, has just been paid £135,000 by an actual gold bullion firm. Do you think he got that for 12 weeks' work? A, 12 weeks' work. B, 12 days' work. Or C, 12 hours' work. And I will do my best to remember to tell you the answer to that before close of play today. A lot of exciting things. Well, one really exciting thing coming up later in the programme. And you know what it is. But it has happened. It is here. He has been. The Mystery Hour, the new Mystery Hour game, the pocket-sized tin Mystery Hour game is now available. More on that later in the programme. And also, because Gavin touched on this, I had an encounter with the police last night. I know what you're thinking. Not another one. I had an encounter, and it's a lovely story. A reminder of two things. Three things. London is wonderful. We're mostly all okay. And the police are doing their best in often incredibly difficult circumstances. More on that to come. Again, with the constant caveat in brackets, if I remember. Callum is in Scunthorpe. Callum, what made you pick up the phone?
You know what? It just sort of really, really hit home for me when I tuned in this morning on my way to work.
Good.
And I just thought, you know what? I need to get in on this. I need to say something.
That's nice. Go on.
So, yeah, I grew up, I'm from a very different sort of generation and class than yourselves and the gentleman that was just previously on. So I'm 26, I'm still quite a young person, really, and I grew up in an area that was really deprived of community.
I think the last lad was from a similar background to you, sort of geographically and socioeconomically. It's just that when he was your age, that the community stuff still existed. He was the man with the whippets, mate. I don't think he had many silver spoons.
I didn't quite catch
it. No, that's fine. It's just a detail.
Hold,
so. It's just a detail. Carry on.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So yeah, growing up for me, it was really tough. You know, it was very easy to fall into a bad crowd because we didn't have a sense of community. We didn't have much around us. And I was part of the cadets as well. I was part of the sea cadets. I had an amazing time there, both as a young person and later as an instructor. But what I sort of explained to the gentleman who I spoke to just before yourself was one thing that really, really made a big difference for me was the youth council. It was one of the few things left, you know, when all of the sort of community centres and the after-school clubs had all stopped, the youth council was still going and we'd meet a couple of times a week. And not only did it give me a sense of purpose, a place to be, it helped us enact real change.
Wow.
And it still can now. You know, they're still going in every area that's got a constituency, there will be a youth council.
That. I didn't know that. And it's like a sort of reflection of the grown-up council and young people can get involved in their own community.
Very much so. It's held exactly the same. We have, I'm not part of it anymore.
Sure.
I've gone on to sort of live my own grown-up life. But we had our young member of parliament. And I was the young member for democracy.
Wow.
Because I truly believed, I personally wouldn't stand for any position, because I truly believe that democracy was dying in this country. I still believe it is.
Yeah, you've got a point.
It's so sad to say that. But to take that position at a young age, I very much thought that I was going to get a lot of backlash, and they supported me wholeheartedly, and we really made a difference to a lot of people's lives.
What?
Young people who didn't feel confident.
I know that you're uncomfortable with the question I'm about to ask you, because that's the way that you're built, but tell me more about the difference it made to you, because I understand that you made a difference and your colleagues made a difference to other people, but what difference did it make to you, and what would it not being there have looked like? Do we think?
You know, the difference it made to me was very much the same as the difference it made to a lot of other young people.
Yeah.
I was a lost and lonely child. I went through a lot when I was younger, stuff that I'll not necessarily go into on the radio. But I really struggled with myself, my being comfortable in my own body, and being able to find friends and you know, have that friendship group. And it gave me that. And it gave me that with structure and really good, qualified, trained people who were really supportive, who were really keen on encouraging you to learn whatever you wanted. So, yeah, it made a difference for me in the same way it made a difference for a lot of other people as well.
I'm hearing, not with you, but with the big picture, as we all talk about this, there's a real chicken and egg thing going on, more so for your generation than any other, where that social isolation that you describe, potential social isolation that this organisation helped you alleviate, is not necessarily caused by social media, but my goodness, I mean, it's hard to know what comes first, the social media or the social isolation, but there's no way they're not linked, is there?
No, without a doubt. They're definitely both linked. And, I, you know, again, being the generation that I am, I grew up with social media.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, it was very... I think for me, it was a personal thing. It was very easy to get lost in it. And I decided, you know what, I don't want to do that. And I want to try and find a way that I can better myself and not just become completely socially isolated.
Yeah. And again, one of the themes that pops up on this program with quite heartwarming regularity is the fact that just because some of us possess attributes that allow us to access certain things doesn't mean that other people won't need help to access the same things or to achieve the same things. And that's really what society and government are for, to oil the wheels, if you like, of mobility and of progress. But if you're stuck in your bedroom scrolling, I know that's a figure of speech and a cliche, the idea that you don't need a little bit of help stepping out of that universe is obnoxious and absurd. Callum, that's brilliant. Thank you. How could anyone argue with any of this? I think that occasionally on the program, but today, once you bring the class element into it, I mean, it's such a Rosetta Stone, that, right? It's such a skeleton key. Why is it only Labour governments that get involved in this kind of thing? Because your average Tory, and this isn't even a criticism, it's simply a description, has no concept of what it's like to have no access to all the things they grew up with access to. And I can speak from a position of guilt, not just a position of critiquing others. But if you've got a Greek club at your school, the notion of hitting 3:30 when the bell goes and not knowing what you're going to do until bedtime is inconceivable, to paraphrase the Princess Bride. It's absolutely inconceivable. There is always something you can do. You can play table tennis. You can play snooker. You can play pool. You can go to fly fishing club. You can go to Greek club. You can go to the model railway club. Not every school's going to have every one of these, but just the simple space, especially if you're boarding, as almost every member of the last few Tory cabinets was, the world that you inhabit is so utterly different. And to bring the politics back into it, what moves into the vacuum that is created? Racists who think that they are somehow endorsing community spirit by painting your local roundabout. Literally, that's the vacuum that is created by all of the things that we're describing. And who moves into vacuums fastest and first? The worst kind of people move into vacuums fastest and first, with wrong answers, with lies, with othering, with demonisation and with discrimination. Point over there, that's who to blame. Don't blame the people that shut the library. Blame the people staying in the travel lodge up the road. Don't blame the people who shut the library. Don't blame the people who shut the community centres. Blame, I don't know, blame the unemployed people who quite possibly would have jobs if they hadn't shut the community centres. And speaking of those kind of characters, the answer to the question of how long Nigel Farage worked in return for the £135,000 that he has just received from a gold bullion company was, and you may have worked this out for yourself, it was not 12 weeks. It was not 12 days. The answer was 12 hours. And yes, you're right. That's the same Nigel Farage who has announced that he is minded to cut the national minimum wage in the event of him ever getting into power. So 135 grand for he, and a cut to the minimum wage for thee. It is coming up to 10:45. Margie on the Wirral is up next. Interesting, all the calls so far have come from the north. And looking at my screen, I've got two Leeds. Well, I've got a Croydon, there we go, and I've got a Merton as well. Hopefully we'll have time to get to those. But the other thing I need to tell you is about Operation Servitor. Metropolitan Police and other police organisations doing a thing that, because they don't have a massive budget or a marketing rate or 10 lobby groups who masquerade as think tanks without telling us who pays their wages operating on their behalf, you may not have actually come across it. This is what the leaflet says. We want to protect London from harm. We need your help to do this, to remain alert in the places you live, work and socialise. You may have picked up on, I'm not reading this bit now, on a little bit more police activity in your community. You may not have done, but I have. I have noticed it in Brentford, in West London, where I live. And they say this activity is designed to keep our communities safe from a range of criminal activity, including terrorism. So there are plainclothes officers around who you won't have noticed. There will be uniformed officers, search dogs, police horses, vehicles and searches. And if you go to met.police.uk, you can find out a little bit more about it and discover what the purpose behind it is. 101 remains the number you should call if you encounter anything suspicious. And specially trained officers, that's the point, will take your call. Just an attempt to sort of... I'm mentioning it now because it speaks to community. It's the idea that police officers are in your community and they are there to help you and they are there to... catch the people who wish us all harm or who are doing bad things. And this is a tiny little story, but it made my day. It uplifted me. I'm coming back from tennis yesterday. I play on a municipal court before anybody accuses me of having a pack of beagles in my garage. What do you mean you've got a garage? Honestly, O'Brien, you've got no idea, have you? It's a garage socialist or a garage socialist, perhaps. My phone fell out of my pocket. I realised when I got home. And what's that feeling like? Who hasn't had that feeling? Oh, lordy. You've left it on the tube. It's fallen. Or you can't work out where it is, but you know you haven't got it. And I think that's it. That's game over. It's Christmas next week. What the hell am I going to do without a phone? Or the week after next, but you take my point. And so Mrs. O'Brien does the thing on her phone, you know, put a message, register on Find My, register as lost. And we can see it on Find My. And it's up the road. It's not on the route that I took home. So I'm obviously thinking straight away, oh, someone's got it. Why haven't they turned it off? I'm also thinking that. Why haven't they turned it off? And also, I can still press that thing to beep it. So we hop in the car and we start driving towards where it is on the map. And halfway there, it's only a 5-minute drive away, if that, the phone rings. And I can see on the screen, on my wife's phone screen, that it's my phone. I said, this is incredible. Have you lost your phone, mate? Yeah, I have. This is amazing. Where are you? Who are you? This is incredible. Thank you. And he goes, oh, we're just parked up on the corner, opposite the Premier Inn. You just look for the big police van. So I turn up, a big police van, opposite the Premier Inn. And it is an Uber Eats driver who has seen the phone in the road, going on his way, sees the van parked up, brings the phone over, gives it to the coppers. The coppers ring me. The police officer, sounding like some sort of extra from Minder in 1984. Coppers, shut up. And they ring me. And so not only is it the good citizenship of the Uber Eats driver, but it's also the fact that the police were present. There was somewhere he could go with my phone. It wouldn't have happened otherwise. And then the fact that when they reunited me with my phone, they were able to ask me to mention Project Servitor on the radio this morning because it is there and it is real and it is happening. So there you go. That's my Christmas. That's my tale of Christmas cheer for 2025.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
She's notorious for her willingness to prescribe harmful gender treatment to children, even supporting giving puberty blockers to children aged just 9 and younger. The founder of the transgender clinic Gender GP, Helen Webley, is here to take your calls. It could get spicy.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Tap the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Do you have a Co-op card or membership number? In July, Co-op's CEO confirmed that the personal data of all 6.5 million members was accessed in a major cyber attack. If you're a member, your information may have been exposed, and you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It's 10:51 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Dave was the name of the officer who actually handed over the phone. So a big shout this morning to Dave and his colleagues. And thank you for all the work you're doing on my patch. Not just my patch. I've done it again. Why am I talking like this when I start thinking of the police? I've said coppers and patch. They've got my patch. What are you talking about? You went to a school that had its own beagle pack. You've never used the word patch in plain speaking in your life, you wombat. Anyway, thank you, Dave and colleagues. You probably know this already. If you don't, stand by your hat. The winners of the Global Player Awards 2025 have been announced. The newsagents win Best Podcast Show. It is officially the most listened to podcast on Global Player. Unless you include radio figures as well when counting the overall number of listeners. And the biggest new podcast, and this is also brilliant, by the way, is Christiane Amanpour Presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, her former husband, in case you're confused by the titles, but both of them veterans of being in the room where it happens. Jamie actually as an actor in the political space, and Christiane, of course, was one of the doyens of journalism, international journalism, over the last two or three decades. One of whom, Christiane, has appeared on Full Disclosure, which extraordinarily was completely ignored by the judges, despite the fact that presumably they're all my colleagues, are they? There you go. Didn't even get a sniff. By far the best long-form interview podcast series in the history of the internet, and nothing. Christiane Amanpour, can we remove that one? Can we delete the ones with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Christiane Amanpour in a fit of pique and spite? Would that be too childish? Or can we do it? For the full list, which I'm not on, and to listen to both of these award-winning shows, then do head over to Global Player, which is rather wonderful and completely free. Back to youth clubs, off to the Wirral. Margie is there. Margie's on the Wirral. What would you like to say?
Hello, yes, good morning. This is actually a subject I've been complaining about for a number of years. The reason being that when I was growing up in our local area, we actually had two youth clubs.
Yes.
One for the younger kids, one for the older kids.
Can I be very ungallant and ask how old you are now? Or you don't have to tell me.
I'm 57.
Okay. Right, so we're talking about the sort of 80s, really,
when 80s. You were
of the relevant age. Yeah. 70s, yeah. Late 70s and 80s.
Yeah. So we had a younger club, which was
an old Nissan hut, really. And it would be open weekends and school holidays. And we went there for no other reason than it was a place to gather. It was a place to hang out. It was a place to do activities.
So it was supremely unremarkable at the time and in your memory, and yet for somebody of that age now, almost unbelievable. Isn't it mad how fast the world turns? Well, there was a place you could go, and people would be there, and you could make friends and do stuff, and it was human beings, and it wasn't on screens, and it was real life.
Yep, they would organise various different activities, and in the holidays in particular, they would organise one day a week coach trips to local areas in North Wales and things like that. And it was great fun. And then for the older kids, there was a community centre attached to the library, which was closed a couple of years ago due to the cuts. And they would have weekend discos. So on a Friday and Saturday night, you could go, you could have fun, soft drinks, etc. There was, you know, older adults supervising. But other than that, it was just somewhere to hang out and have fun.
Give me an idea, if you can, briefly, of the difference that you think it made to people's lives, including if you want your own.
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, without that, I mean, yes, I used to go, you know, after school and that to my friend's house and things like that. But, you know, you'd hang out with one or two friends. But at these clubs, you'd get to hang out with dozens of people, you know, from your school, other schools, etc. We'd have a laugh and things like that. And I think it did make a big difference.
It has to.
The
sense of community you have and what you do with your lives, and you're less likely, if you feel a sense of kinship with your neighbours, then you are less likely to put a brick through a bus shelter window. I mean,
exactly.
Bus shelters don't have windows, but some of this is self-evident, isn't it? I'm so glad I've finally given my head a wobble on this subject and recognised two things, really. The power of these sort of organisations and just buildings, I think we're learning, and the wisdom of the Labour government of trying to revivify, trying to resurrect this part of community, because all of the things that we talk about, we miss this bit out. You talk about a divided society, you talk about atomisation, you talk about isolation, you talk about the rise of ancient hatreds and bigotries, the ease with which people like Farage can turn people against their own neighbours, against their own colleagues and former friends or their children's schoolmates' parents. And it's all because of something that has been lost, being blamed on the wrong cause, being blamed on the wrong reason. And that's why it is one of the biggest subjects, one of the most important conversations we can have. I don't think, thank you, Margie, I don't think anybody is being sceptical, but I will address the question of how the police were able to contact me, lest anybody is genuinely confused. You do a thing on Find My, don't you, where you put a message on the screen of the phone and say, please call this number, and you can call it from the phone that you've got. It's via Apple. I don't know whether it's only Apple to Apple devices, but you program it in so that the person who's got your phone sees this phone has been stolen, please ring this number. And you can ring it from the phone that you are holding. I presume you can only ring that number. I hope Dave, the police officer, not Dave the copper who was on my patch. It's a miracle I didn't call him Gov. But I hope he wasn't sort of ringing up, ringing his mum in Australia or anything like that before he handed the phone to me. But it isn't a mystery, lads. Seriously, it's what the technology does. It enables you to get reunited with your phone. And on the subject of mediocre jokes, the number of people who suggested that my phone might have been stolen by Susan Hall suggests two things. Number one, we're all as sad as each other when it comes to dad jokes. And number two, you were paying attention to yesterday's programme. 10:58 is the time. Emma is in Croydon with the last word on this. What's it going to be, Emma?
I'm a big fan of yours, James.
You're very kind.
The person that I'm going to talk to put me on to you about 5 years ago. But basically, 20 years ago, my husband was a youth worker in Stockwell, South London.
Oh, yes.
Lots of shootings, stabbings, all that kind of awful stuff was going on. And he worked in a youth club. And one of the young people said, when he's about 14, I want to do something different with my life. His brother and his friends, who my husband also worked with, were kind of into drugs, gangs, all of that. So he got him to do jobs around the youth centre. and then linked him with a lawyer that we know, and this young person, who's now 35, is qualified and a successful lawyer. And I think the thing that I wanted to talk about is we went to his birthday party and an engagement party a couple of weeks ago in Clerkenwell. Yeah. He had an open bar, so he's very successful. And he's got the same circle of friends that, you know, grew up in Stockwell.
Yes.
And so many of them came up to my husband talking about, you know, thanking him for believing in them, for being there, for opening their horizons. He was also involved in something called Snow Camp,
right,
that took inner city young people on skiing trips. And my husband always said they would literally be, you know, against each other, and then they'd get out of London sort of 10, 20 minutes, they're down the road and they're all together. And that sense of community and belonging and just having different experiences was really, really, impactful on their life. But
incredible stories. And you know, I mean, there'll be a sliding scale as well, won't there? There'll be the fancy pants lawyer who can afford an open bar, but there'll be lots of other people on different rungs on the same ladder.
Yeah, there's a train driver.
There we go.
One had a beauty salon.
Yeah.
Another's a professional footballer. So yeah, their parents as well. So they talked about, you know, that experience. But yeah, youth clubs were great.
Are we going to take a turn now and you're going to tell me that the club's not there anymore?
Of course it's not there. It was, you know, funded, and it, yeah, the funding got cut a long time ago, so my husband went into kind of more residential work. Yeah, but
he sounds like quite a guy. He sounds like a keeper.
He is. He's amazing.
And if that wasn't enough,
he got me on to you.
That's what I was about to say. If that wasn't enough to chalk up in the plus column, he told you about this program as well.
Yeah,
will you give him our best? What's his name? Just his Christian name. I don't want to embarrass him.
Clive. His name is Clive.
We like Clives, and we like this Clive in particular. Thank you, Emma. What a lovely thing to hear, and that idea, not just from Clive and Emma, but from the boys themselves, the children themselves, the girls as well, just recognising the role that they played. And this has been a big morning for me, because I'd already done the head wobble of thinking, of course it was an answer to the question I was asking, but I hadn't worked out why I was such an idiot. I've been being a bit unkind to myself. I hadn't worked out why I've struggled to see the importance of something that was self-evident to you. And that's the answer. It's class. It's class, and it almost makes me a little bit more sympathetic to some of the Tories that shut these places down, because it wouldn't have crossed their mind that they were providing something that you don't otherwise have, because people like me never didn't have it. It's not even Joni Mitchell, is it? It's not, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. It's, you don't know how important something is if you've never actually noticed that you've got it and other people haven't.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, NHS England's medical director has warned the country is facing an unprecedented wave of superflu. Professor Meghana Pandit says the health service is experiencing a worst-case scenario for this time of year. The spike in infections is linked to a new mutated strain of the virus. LBC's Helen Hodinott says there is currently no peak in sight.
The number of people being hospitalised for flu has surged by more than half in just a week. That's according to these new figures out today, meaning there were an average of 2,660 patients in hospital per day with flu last week. That is the highest ever for this time of year, and up 55% on last week.
Senior members of the doctors' union have played down the prospect of members accepting a new offer. The health secretary, Wes Streeting, has proposed an expansion of training places in an attempt to avert a pre-Christmas strike in England. Leaders at the BMA have described it as a mixed bag because it does nothing on pay. Policing leaders say as many as 1.2 million children were the victims of sexual abuse last year. New figures show half of known offending against children was committed by people aged between 10 and 17. Acting Chief Constable Becky Riggs is the national lead for child protection. She's told LBC that abuse is hugely underreported and goes way beyond grooming gangs.
Just one of those crimes represents child sexual abuse and exploitation of an unimaginable type of crime. So it could be babies, children and young people, 0 to under the age of 18.
She's called on social media platforms to do more to report crime and stop the sharing of explicit images. A former MP and council leader has defected from the Conservatives to Reform UK. Ben Bradley, who lost his Mansfield seat last year, has been appointed as Reform's head of local government action. And fans will be able to enter the ballot for World Cup tickets from this afternoon. Supporters groups say they are facing record high prices to follow their teams in the US, Canada and Mexico next year. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.61. That's up 6 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places dry and bright this morning, but becoming cloudier through the day with some rain arriving in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11 is the time. Very good morning indeed to you. I've got some rather good news. I was joking a moment ago, joking around, just joshing, yeah? When I was telling you about the Global Player Awards and the inexcusable fact that I appear to be absent from all categories, despite presenting several superb podcasts, the news agents romping home ahead of the field on the most popular podcast on Global Player, and Christiane Amanpour and her ex-husband Jamie Rubin coming in on the best newcomers. I guess technically I couldn't have got best. I have actually won a very prestigious award. I was just told during the break, and I will share more details of that with you this hour. I almost certainly won't forget, and I want you to form an orderly queue before congratulating me. It's literally just been announced in the last 6 minutes, and I am delighted to tell you that I am the recipient. And it's all me as well. I don't even have to go on about the team or pretend that other people are intrinsic to my success. They mentioned my agent, if I had one. Keith, nothing to do with Keith, nothing to do. Eleanor's not here today, but it doesn't matter because this award is all for me. Elliot standing in for, that doesn't matter either because this award is all about me. It's all about, nothing to do with Rebecca, nothing to do with Amelia, nothing to do with any of the management team upstairs, nothing to do with any of the other presenters. It's all about me, this award, and I'm delighted to have won it, and I will share more details regarding precisely what it is, probably in about 10 minutes, in 8 or 9 minutes, before we hit the next break, because I don't want you to die from suspense. That would cast quite a shadow over my extraordinary achievement, over my magnificent achievement, over my unprecedented success. That's coming up very, very shortly. So what do we move on to next out of those five stories? We've done the importance of the youth clubs. I like the story, as in I think it would be very illuminating. If you're just joining us, there were five stories this morning that I sort of sensed or believed were all linked in various different ways. One about Lisa Nandy's determination to revivify the world of youth clubs and community centres for young people. One about half of people held by the Met in a single month being likely to have ADHD. One about the social media ban in Australia. One about David Lammy's determination to excise criminal records for some former young offenders. And one about the rocketing youth unemployment. You can see that they all dance around the same maypole, almost. We may get back to the ADHD one tomorrow because we're all on an incredible journey of discovery with regard to some of these neurodivergences and the sense they make of things that have gone on in countless lives previously and continue to go on in countless others. But I think to turn you to David Lammy's, not least because the idea that the government isn't doing anything or doesn't do anything is challenged pretty robustly, isn't it, by both Lisa Nandy and her determination to help reach young people, and by David Lammy, who, for good or for ill, is in the process of abolishing jury service access to trial by jury for some accused potential criminals. And here is another example of something proactive that seems to come from a very good place. Thousands of people could have their childhood criminal records wiped under reforms being considered by David Lammy. Part of the reasons behind this would be to enhance the future job prospects of people who are still on the hook for things they did when they were, in many cases, very young. So some of the stories I've heard in the past, do you know, I'm not as funny as I think I am. Some people have already guessed what my award, there's nothing funny about the award that I've won, but I can't believe some people have already guessed, well, maybe you've Googled it, have you? You've had it, you've looked it up and realised that what I've won. Okay, that's fine. 160,000 people have childhood offences, have had childhood offences reported to employers, according to a Freedom of Information request. I don't know if this is class or whether I just got lucky, but I came to the attention of the police twice as a young person, once for shoplifting, stealing from Woolworths in Kidderminster. That was one of the worst days of my life. I've told you that story. Out of all the stories I share with you, far too much. That's the one that chills my tummy the most. When my dad came into the interview room, I've never felt smaller, actually, up to and including the time I got slung out of school for drugs offences, and they got the drug squad involved in that as well. So I've had two, but no convictions, you see. Just slaps on the wrist, both metaphorical and, I think, when I got home, actual. But the idea that that would follow me around, would that, if I'd gone to court and been convicted on the shoplifting offence or on the possession. I don't know actually what I would have been done for on that, given that we weren't found in... Anyway, it's a long time ago and it wouldn't matter. But had that been on my record, then I wouldn't have been able to be a teacher. Is that right? I wouldn't have been able to be a social worker. I presume there are quite a few jobs, maybe the armed services, maybe the police service. And listen, I mean, you can do things at 15, 16, 17 that should absolutely colour the rest of your life. I would have thought that telling Jewish schoolmates that they belong in the gas chamber or marching around South London insisting that Hitler was right is something that you should never really be able to excise from the collective memory unless you clearly and publicly repent for your behaviour. But shoplifting or smoking weed... The idea that that can cast a shadow over your adult life, even now, does seem to me to be wrong. The problem that you'll have, but I don't think it's a particularly big problem to solve, is where the line is between serious and trivial. In many ways, the law tells us where the line is between serious and trivial. But there will be room for debate over the precise definition of serious offences. Arson, racial harassment, violent disorder must be disclosed to employers for life. And, you know, if you were introducing somebody into for example, a racially diverse workforce, then you would owe it to your other colleagues, wouldn't you? You'd owe it to your other employees to be aware of the fact and to ask somebody about the fact that they had a conviction for racial harassment in the past. That's quite a good example, actually, given the obvious racial harassment involved in making jokes to Jewish children about gas chambers, insisting Hitler was right, or calling black schoolboys to go back to Africa, as Nigel Farage reportedly did in his youth on an increasingly extraordinary number, or almost on a daily basis, as far as we can tell. But, of course, he was never arrested or charged with racial harassment in any of those cases. Why do you approve or disapprove of this plan? And I think approval will come almost entirely from... personal experience. I just want to know how hard it is. And listen, again, at risk of really driving home the fact that I went to a school that had its own beagle pack, I do recognise I've lived quite a sheltered life in many ways. And it would have been much easier to get into much more trouble had I not had the kind of upbringing that I had. I still managed to get into more trouble than was fair on my mum or my dad. But still... The things you did, look, here's the point. I fully believe that people can change. One of the easiest ways to tell whether they've changed is to look them in the eye and trust your instincts. It's not infallible, not perfect, but you would know. You can tell if someone is ashamed of something that they've done in the past. You can tell if someone is sorry for something that they've done in the past. You can tell if somebody has changed. This is why I link this story to the conversation about youth clubs. If you have benign and positive influences in your life, even if they come much later than your youth, then you can become a different person from the one you were when you committed crimes in your youth. And if you're now in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, or in some cases even older, and you are forced, you are compelled, required to disclose to potential employers things that you did in your teens, and many employers will look at you differently as a consequence, I can't help thinking that Lammy's on the right path here. He's on the right course here. So, what did you do? And what impact has it had? How many people really would argue that they were exactly the same person that they were when they were in their late teens? That you would still do today what you did then? I mean, I kind of can't quite imagine myself shoplifting records from Woolworths. Well, it'd be very hard, wouldn't it? Because Woolworths doesn't exist anymore. But you take my point. The idea that that would tell a potential employer anything about my honesty seems to me to be close to ridiculous. But then, you know, it's one of my strange habits, isn't it, to be a little bit authoritarian on some subjects and very, very committed to the importance of the relationship between actions and consequences. And nobody's saying you shouldn't have been punished at the time. Nobody's saying you shouldn't have had your collar felt. Nobody's saying that your, you know, victim should just shut up and move on. They're simply saying that 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, what possible relevance does a youth crime have upon the adult you have become? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. I mean, in many ways, that shock of being caught out, this is my personal experience, was enough to ensure that you'd never engage in certain behaviours again, that you would be so frightened of consequences and so fearful of punishment and indeed of shame, particularly if you're lucky enough to have loving and committed parents. What you put them through when you get into trouble is often enough to put you off behaving similarly for the rest of your life. But I don't know. I don't know. So what happened to you? 22,000 black, Asian and ethnic minority children had a police record, including for very minor matters such as a police reprimand. So I don't know the lingo here. I got a police caution, but it's not on my record. Or maybe I didn't get one. Maybe I did just get told off, partly because perhaps my parents were professionals and I was a private school. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I do know this. It can't be right, okay? It can't be right, can it, for people to still be held accountable as adults for things that they did as teenagers if they have clearly, consciously and demonstrably changed? Here's another question. How can you tell? So I've mentioned Farage's schoolboy anti-Semitism and racism and all of the allegations now mounting against him from countless former school friends. Nobody's claimed that he's changed. Isn't that extraordinary? Even him. He moves from saying it never happened to saying it no one can remember to saying, well, it did happen and I can remember, to saying it wasn't racist, to saying it was racist but it wasn't offensive, which isn't, of course, for him to say. It's for people like Peter Otedgi, who was with me last Friday, to say. Still, you could tell. Didn't even tell his mum and dad at the time because he didn't want to take the gloss off what they'd achieved by sending him to private school. How can you tell whether someone's changed? There's a very, very good example there of somebody that I don't think anyone's argued he has changed. If all of those allegations are true and nobody is coming forward to say, I don't recognise the man being described, that's quite illustrative, isn't it? That's quite significant. But park that. Forget about him, if you can. The question of how you can tell whether or not somebody has changed. How do you convince someone that you've changed? So the first question is the what of it, the facts of it, the simple question of what it is that has hung over you and why you are convinced that it's hideously unfair. 0345 6060 973. And then perhaps something we can all get involved with, even employers perhaps. I had a wonderful full disclosure interview, the non-award winning this year, for the non-global award winning full disclosure, global player award winning full disclosure podcast with James Timpson. subsequently, of course, appointed to the Lords and as a prisons minister by Keir Starmer's government. We sat down with him last year. His father pioneered a scheme which employs former prisoners, fully cognizant of criminal records, not youthful criminal records, but adult criminal records. And the explanation as to why recognises two things. The first is altruistic. The first is the ability to repent, the ability to be redeemed, the ability to change. And the second is that the gratitude and loyalty that you engender by giving somebody who no one else would give a break to a break, actually, it enhances your business. It makes your business better to have people who are so committed to a company that has given them a chance no one else would give them, often after coming out of jail. And James talks of other companies that have followed his lead as a consequence of seeing the impact it has upon the morale and the commitment of his workforce. So how do you know, as an employer or as the former criminal or as a colleague, how do you know when someone's changed? I kind of love that question. Because it's not science, is it? It's something else. What happens when these criminal records pop up every time you apply for a job, even though it happened decades ago? 03456060973. And how can you tell whether or not someone has changed? I guess the first and obvious answer to that is because they wouldn't lie about what it is that they did back then. They wouldn't change their story every 2 minutes. They wouldn't still look shifty and still be untrustworthy and still be dishonest. But once you've got past that rather obvious alarm bell, how can you tell? How can you tell? 03456060973. And after this, wonderful news about the latest award to be making its way as we speak towards my already groaning mantelpiece.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with a snack, stories, and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. You can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service and even financial advice so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 21 minutes after 11. Is it an award for most improved tennis player? Thank you, Roddy. No. Is it the award for worst dressed presenter? What do you mean? That's just so rude, honestly. No, it's not that. Overnight's Oats of the Year could be. Or is it something a little bit more obvious? Well, an awful lot of you sort of... Well, I'm delighted to tell you that I have just been awarded, during that break, that management came downstairs, and I have been awarded the Global Player Peace Award. Brackets, LBC mid-morning show category, close brackets. I am, and it puts me in extraordinary company, doesn't it? It puts me in extraordinary company. Everyone, all of the best people are picking up peace awards on entirely spurious grounds at the moment.
This is truly one of the great honors of my life. And beyond awards, John and I were discussing this. We saved millions and millions of lives. The Congo is an example, over 10 million people killed. And, you know, the fact that we could do that, India, Pakistan, so many different wars that we're able to end, in some cases a little bit before they started, just right before they started.
I mean, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, but the thing he signed with Congo did not include the leader of the rebel forces responsible for many of the deaths that he exaggerated and described, and that those rebels have reportedly just entered Democratic Republic of a major city in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So he didn't really end any wars, but that's by the by. As a fellow recipient of a major global peace award, in my case, global in both senses of the word, I think it's time we stopped quibbling over whether or not wars have ended. I too have ended 8 wars this year, and I'm not going to bore you with the details. You will trust me. I have saved millions and millions of lives this year. Details are for the losers and the nerds. So I am now the global player, Peace Prize winner, brackets, LBC Mid-Morning Show category, closed brackets, 2025. And I don't have to thank anybody because I've done it all on my own. All on my own. 24 minutes after 11 is the time. Let's end a few more wars together, shall we, before Mystery Hour comes around at 12 o'clock today. Anita is in Slough to steer us back to the question about convictions and the shadow they cast over later life. Anita, what made you pick up the phone?
I've been feeling really angry about my conviction that I got in my 20s. Shoplifting, I had a child with me, who had shoplifted some clothes. I got caught. They gave me a suspended sentence plus probation. I'm a mixed race person. I did live in Moss Side at the time, and I always think it might be a bit of a racial thing. I've never been in trouble before. Now, since then, I've never been in trouble. I've never had any sort of sentence or, you know, since yes. then. And I've applied to be a care worker. The country is desperate for care workers. But the DBS, it comes up that I've been shoplifting. So in my youth.
How old
so
are
I
you
can't
now?
Get a job.
Well, I don't know that it
I'm
would.
I'm in my 70s.
Good
I'm
Lord.
In my 70s.
So this is 50
Never
years
been
later.
In trouble.
This is 50
then.
Years later.
Yes. And I'm absolutely really annoyed about it, because what I think they should do, after 20 years, they can check to maybe 20 years, check to see if we've been in trouble, and then wipe that from the slate. But you see, that sentence now is deep down. It'll come up in a DBS. So that is, that has prevented me. And I'm even frightened to apply for anything that needs a DBS, like fostering and things like that. I do a lot of voluntary work in my area, help people all the time. I'm a very caring and helpful person. But I can't get, I wouldn't never be able to get a job. In the past, I've tried for care workers, can't do fostering.
I'm genuinely surprised, but I don't know why I'm surprised. I thought convictions got spent, but that's something that comes up on your record if you apply
on
for...
On a DBS. On a DBS.
Oh, okay, so on a specific...
They
do go deep. And that, I mean, Lammy's not even suggesting it should extend to people who committed crimes in their 20s, but you're making a pretty strong case for him thinking about it. What on earth is a 20, 30, 40-year-old shoplifting conviction supposed to tell a potential employer about you, do you think?
Well, I'm a thief.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I'm a thief. I've never been in trouble for the past 50 years, never had any. I'm a more of a helping person. So, I mean, I know people that are petty thieves at work, stealing this and stealing that. But, you know, yes, they don't get caught. They're not convicted for things like that. And my little shoplifting thing when I was stupid and, you know, young and things like that.
Yeah, I am amazed. You know, I am amazed at that. And I don't know whether it means we've got the phone in slightly wrong and we should be extending it beyond people who committed crimes in their youth into people who, like you, committed crimes in their 20s that sound, I mean, utterly at odds with A, the person that you are today, but B, the person that you are by the following month, by the following year. And the doors that it shuts, the portcullises that come down on your potential life path. I mean, in your case, 50 years of having to deal with it. I'm genuinely a bit gobsmacked by that, Anita, and I'm very sorry for what you've been through. It is 28 minutes after 11. Simon Marks is with us, by the way, at 11:45 to talk about the latest news from the land of my fellow Peace Prize winner. Albeit, I think we can all agree, the Global Player Peace Prize, black brackets, mid-morning LBC show, and as Roberto has pointed out, thank you, Roberto, I misread the plaque, weekdays. So LBC mid-morning weekdays category, close brackets. I think we can all agree that's a much bigger deal than the equally spurious and invented FIFA Peace Prize. But Donald Trump is, well, it's hard to know where to start. Luckily, we don't have to decide. Simon Marks will in about 15 minutes' time. Before that, I think I will come to Dane in Enfield first after the news bulletin. I'll try and hit it on time. Might as well do it once this year before it's 2026. The other thing I wanted to do is a couple of thank yous, actually. I wanted to thank the Original Black Garlic Company for the Christmas present that they have sent to me. I am looking forward enormously to trying some of their wares deliciously. And also to Ren, who runs Ren's Pantry. I mentioned Ren last year because she sent me a massive box of blends and spices. And now she sent me a load more. And extraordinarily, which is a mark of how beautiful her spices are and how wonderful some of the recipes are as well. I've used a lot of what she sent me last year. I've started cooking curries this year, the likes of which I never thought I would be able to cook. You can find out more about Ren at renspantry.com. R-E-N-S-pantry.com. Two lovely little boxes that were waiting for me on my desk when I got into work this morning. I mean, look, they're all right, but let's not kid ourselves. They're not exactly up there with a Global Player Peace Prize, are they? Brackets. LBC, mid-morning, weekdays only, close brackets. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned there is a tidal wave of flu tearing through our hospitals. More than 2,600 patients per day were in a hospital bed with flu last week. That's the highest ever for this time of year. Union leaders have played down the prospect of resident doctors calling off their pre-Christmas strike. They say a new offer from the government is a mixed bag because it does nothing on pay. Britain's lead child protection officers told LBC that abuse remains hugely underreported. New figures show as many as 1.2 million children were the victims of sexual abuse last year. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC. Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60, max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
Please welcome the very first winner of
the Global Player
Peace Prize.
It's James O'Brien.
Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much. It's the best Leos prize. Can I have a medal, please? Thank you. That's lovely. I'll just pop it on myself. Give me my medal. Thank you. Yep. Thank you. No, no one. Don't need to thank anyone. Did it all myself. Marvellous news. 11:32 is the time. Horrible story, really. The idea of people being haunted and held back from reaching their full potential by things they did in their teens, crimes they committed in their teens. We'll return to that shortly, but another quick heads up on that thing you just heard in the news bulletin. The number of people in hospital in England with flu is at a record level. And this is a serious warning because it's only December the 11th and it was up by an average of 2,660 patients in hospital each day last week. I told you on Monday, or possibly yesterday, that we know two teenage boys, I don't know why I mentioned that. I suppose you're supposed to say fighting age, aren't you, in Brexit Britain. But, you know, you think of them as being in their pomp, in their prime. And they have been hospitalised after contracting flu. And that's up from 1,000. So it's up by almost 1,000 in a single week. This time last year, the number was about 1,000 lower. And in 2023, it was just 402. So when the National Medical Director of the NHS, Professor Meghana Pandit, says this unprecedented wave of superflu is leaving the NHS facing a worst case scenario for this time of year, we should all pay attention. And of course, the advice yesterday was that if you display any symptoms whatsoever, then you should consider wearing a face mask. And like night following day, there are a couple of extremely hard of thinking individuals in your right-wing newspapers today having a fit of the vapors at the very suggestion, just as I told you there would be. Oh, no prizes for names. 11:34 is the time. Dane is in Enfield on the criminal records and the youthful, I don't want to say indiscretion, so I will say crimes. Dane, what made you pick up the phone?
Just a thing about going on about like our people paying the price for crimes that they done when they was youthful, which they are no longer that person anymore. Like everybody, none of us are the same as what we was when we was at that age. And I personally have been knocked back on jobs because of my honesty now that I won't work for someone that doesn't know that I have a checkered past. And with real direct customers, that's really easy. But applying for a job on a firm, it comes up on my DBS with a multitude of things, starting from, I think, the first time I got nicked, I was 14.
Right.
And the last time I got nicked, I was probably 25.
And how old are you now?
58.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting. So, you know, you've got quite a long record, I sense. But
yeah,
it's all,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It's all very old. It's all close to ancient history. Well, I mean, I think I need to ask you. You don't have to tell me, and you may not agree that I need to ask you, but what was the worst thing you did?
Well, the worst thing, it depends on how you value it. You could say, like,
well, how do you value it?
Caught. Well, the worst thing I did was not actually a crime in law. It was when I was a heroin addict.
Right.
And I kidnapped my mother using emotional blackmail, saying that I was going to go and do something crazy if you didn't help me borrow money off of a rich relative.
Okay. So that's the thing you're most that's the thing you're most ashamed of.
I'm not ashamed of it because I've done it. I'm not ashamed of it because if I carry shame, then that's not going to be helpful to me. That was a really horrendous.
You're quite right. Yes.
I'm not proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah.
It's just what it was. Like if you want to judge me for that single worst moment of my existence, in my opinion, then that just tells me about you. Like, and but if you're my employer, that means I'm not going to get a job.
And in terms of criminal impact, what was the worst thing you did? What's the worst actual crime you committed?
I suppose the longest sentencing thing, yeah, which would be, I suppose, the thing in law. It was handling about just under 300 grand worth of computers that unfortunately come from a European project that knocked 17 countries out of the band, which obviously I had no idea. I was just buying and selling products. But when I got caught for that, Judge Finney at Wood Green Crown ended up giving me a very long time for it.
So you took 17 countries offline, as it were?
The project that they was working on, whatever that was,
right,
was housed in this building where the boys nicked the computers from, and I ended up buying them. So,
yeah. I mean, you're being very honest. And 33 years later, some doors are still closed to you.
100%, 100%. I think that's down to the way that I haven't seen it how the DBS is presented, but I suspect if it was presented in a manner, just say like the previous caller, she's done a shoplifting charge, right?
Yeah.
And that's holding her up. When the DBS present that, it shouldn't just say, this Joanne or whoever has been nicked for shoplifting. It should say, Joanne has been nicked for shoplifting when she was 17, but she has been an absolutely upstanding member of the community since then.
Now, my information is that it does, actually, and Anita may not have realised this, and it may well be that you would still struggle to get a job as a social worker, or there might be some doors that are still going to be shut to you. But I think there was an act a few years ago, and the... it does do that. There is context provided on things like this, but not in a way that's ever impacted on you. Again, it's slightly different, isn't it? In that nobody, if you've had a longish prison sentence, nobody's going to chalk that up as a non-serious crime. Just take me back, Dane, if you would, to what you were saying about like one-on-one customers. If you're doing business on a one-on-one basis with people, you're completely honest with them. You want them to know exactly what happened 28 and longer years ago. How do you do that? How do you handle that?
If it's just a quick customer, like I'm going around there, I put a TV bracket on the wall, The chances are they ain't going to get to hear that information because I'm in, I'm done it, I'm out.
Sure.
But if it's a job that goes on for time or they've got a certain personality where they're engaging and we just end up chatting, and quite often most of my customers, we end up having a relationship. Do you know what I mean?
Like, of course, a friendship.
They kind of grow, do you know what I mean?
I do.
And then as soon as it starts to go down any of that road, a suitable opportunity, I will let that go. That, like, you know, well, you know, I'll say I've had a very checkered life getting to here.
Yes.
And then if they dig into that, I'm more than happy to let them know whatever I feel is relevant.
To tell them.
And if they don't, they just accept that. Like some people just say, I understand, you've got a past, we're not interested, we're interested in you here and now, you're lovely.
And you've got 28 years of a clean nose to point to, really, if anybody is questioning the reality of the change that you've made. What made you change, Dane?
Basically, when my kids got to a certain age, I used to earn real good money doing crazy things. And when my kids got to an age of about, my son was nearly 5.
Right.
And he's now 29. I made a conscious decision that I was running a risk all the time of if I got nicked for doing what I was doing, I could possibly get between 5 and 10 years.
Right.
So I decided that I cannot no longer afford to not be in my children's lives. I'm not giving up their upbringing to someone that I have no hand on other than writing them a letter.
Yeah.
And so it took me a few years to exit what I was doing, and I'm still friends with all the same people. I know all the same lives, but I tend to stay out of them circles because they're still earning good money. They're still, and I could be tempted. I believe my weakness is if someone put such a wonderful deal on the table that there was a nice few quid in it.
Yeah,
I could be tested, so I just avoid it. I still see him. I spoke to him. I wish him happy birthday.
Take yourself out of temptation's way. I mean, that's true of all vaguely addictive behaviours, isn't it? Is that you just need to get more space between yourself and the temptation to avoid the temptation.
Yeah, but as an addict, I believe that once you're an addict, doesn't matter whether it's smoking, drinking, sex, bungee jumping, whatever it is, once you become an addict, you are only ever, once you manage it, so you become an addict and you've managed it and you've now put that in order, that you're only ever, for the rest of your life, you're only ever, don't matter how good you get or what you rise to, you're one step away from that.
Yes.
And when you own it and recognise it, it makes it easier to manage.
And this is linked to what you said to me about shame a moment ago, I think, isn't it? Owning and recognising things does not lead to shame.
No, it leads to power, because but by me saying that, what I've had in the past, before I adopted this attitude years ago...
Yes.
I've been working for someone in their house doing an extension. I'm there for like 3 months. And then all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, they've gone, oh, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and they said you was this and you was that. And I remember it was like feeling edgy about it. And my reaction was probably a little bit digi.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect it. And they was different from me from there on in. And I never got any more work out of them on the end. So I then learned that I need to take the wind out of their sails before they do it, so that before they find out, they need to hear it from my mouth, so that they know, and then they can decide, is this someone that I want in my house?
Do you know, that question of how can you tell that someone has genuinely changed was one I didn't think anyone was going to be able to answer, but you have answered it in a way. Albeit, you know, I don't know if your pattern or model of behaviour would work for everybody else, but that change inside and then it manifests itself outside.
Yeah, because it becomes your problem. If I come around your house, I say, James, I'm going to do this. We end up engaging, sitting down, cup of coffee or beer or something. We're chatting away. And I would steer the conversation into, what did you do when you were a kid? What did you do? How did you grow up? To get that conversation heading.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, of course. Because if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to hide.
Exactly.
Full stop.
Exactly.
Oh, I love this,
mate. If you judge me for any of my past moments, not you, anyone in the world,
of course,
to the world. If you judge me for any of my past moments, all that does is tells me, informs me a massive amount about where your head is.
I get it. Yes. Big, because you've changed and you've made the differences and you know who you are now compared to who you are then. And anybody who sat down with you for 10 minutes would know that you've made those changes and you've made that journey. Did you just use the word digi?
Yes.
Is that your own word or?
No, that's a word from the people that I used to knock around with. If you saw someone come in the pub, say like the pubs we used to work in.
Yeah.
We knew every single person in the pub. No one come in that pub off the street, really. And
got
if
you.
They did.
Everyone would go quiet. Everyone would go quiet and look over.
Yeah. And you'd just look and go, oh, look at that digi fellow over there.
So it's a bit like dodgy, but different.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if you were listening at the 10 o'clock this morning. I said it was too late for us to come up with a word of the year on the programme, but I think you've just done it, Dane.
No problem.
That's our word of the year, 2025, digi, the year of the digi. Thank you, Dane, and good luck. I mean, what are you up to now, apart from the sort of odd jobs and building work and stuff?
I mean, trying to get a farm. I've got a bit of land that I had for the kids and their horses years ago that we're now trying to turn into a regenerative farm. I want to get some mentoring on the go for some youths that are on the cusp of going down the road I went down. I've got a good selection of people that are willing to give up time to offer whatever skill they've got to retrain people.
Got it.
Like, because I believe the only reason people go down the road of crime is because it's what they learn first.
Yes.
And that's what I did. I learned shoplifting because I come from no money, no nothing. We was a poor family. And I wanted the things that the people had, and I had the balls and the madness to go and do it. And once you learn a way, I could never, I'll go shoplifting, but if I wanted to, I know the roots. I could
yes,
go.
Of course.
You never lose it. Once you've done something, you never unlearn it. You just choose to manage it in a different way. And so I think...
Language, we've gone there. No, that's all right. We had to lose a word there. So it's good. It shows how relaxed you are in my company, Dave. Listen, tell Elliot a bit about the plan. If there's anything we can do to help, I'd love to know more, but I don't want to do it on
that. Not at the moment, James, because the council have just told us that there was a planning app that went in 13 years ago that changed us from a farm, and we're not allowed to be a farm. And all of this year, I've been battling with the council. I'm going to win because...
Right. Well, keep us posted.
When I do get somewhere, I'll give you a call back.
I look forward to that. And didn't know what you were going to say when I asked you that question, but goodness me, round the houses attempt to explain why all five of the stories that were on the top of my list this morning were linked couldn't have been proved in more spectacular fashion than by Dane there. I mean, literally talking about community and youth services and youth clubs and giving young people things to do and the relationship between that and crime or unemployment or all of the other things. And there you have someone who's done it, been right round the full tour of those issues and ended up in a place where he wants to stop young people going down the path that he had little option, not no option, but little option, but to go down for the reasons he so brilliantly explained. Possibly the least digi man you'll hear on the radio this year.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A scandal ignored.
Calling for inquiries because they want to jump on a bandwagon of the far right. That affects politics.
A scandal dismissed.
The situation in London in relation to young people being groomed is different to the parts of the country. So what we have in London is young people being groomed to be using county lines.
One of London's darkest secrets for years brushed under the carpet until now.
Hi, my name's Andy Hughes. I'm a reporter for LBC. And the allegations are that you sexually abuse young girls when you were at the
the Met Police.
How will Metropolitan Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley respond to allegations of a grooming gang's cover-up in London? He's here to take your calls in another exclusive edition of Call the Commissioner on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
When you smile,
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 10 to 12. Another man who has never been called Digi in his life, Simon Marks, joins me live from Washington. We generally agree that Simon will come on the programme on the evening before he comes on the programme. But given that he is usually here to detail the latest excesses and egregiousnesses, if that's a word, egregiosities of Donald Trump, the reasons for him being here can change in the, you know, 7 or 8 or 12 hours that elapse between, me saying, are you free, or Eleanor saying, are you free tomorrow, and Simon turning up here. So we'll begin nonetheless with a story that has received a little bit less attention in this country than you might have expected, but it is the hoops through which we will all be required to jump potentially in the future should we want to visit the United States of America, Simon.
Yes, absolutely, James. And I think it is important to pay attention to this, especially as we enter what is going to be a big year here in the United States of America. America's 250th birthday, which is going to be marked across the next 12, 13 months. But also, of course, America, along with Canada and Mexico, hosting the World Cup. So there will be many people in the UK thinking, oh, I fancy heading over because I want to see some of these World Cup matches. We learnt yesterday that anybody applying for an ESTA, that's the basic document that you need to fill out in order to be allowed to engage in visa-free travel to the United States. Anyone, even from countries like the UK, France, South Korea, from which the United States permits visa-free travel, will be required to submit now 5 years of social media history as part of their application for an ESTA. Up until now, the form has required you to, has asked you to disclose the various social media accounts that you operate and the handles that you use, but it hasn't required you to provide them.
assistant.
Now it's going to require you to provide those handles dating back over the last 5 years. You don't have to send in, you know, shed loads of documents showing what you've posted on those accounts. But the government has the right, of course, to scrutinise those accounts. And clearly they wouldn't be requiring the disclosure if they didn't plan to take a look. So this is going to be a burdensome move on the part of bureaucrats who oversee the issuing of these ESTAs so that people can engage in visa-free travel. But it's also going to be a choice now that travellers from the UK are going to face. Do you really want to give the Trump administration details of your social media activity over the last 5 years so that they can scrutinise it? Or will you say to yourself, you know what, they've got those World Cup games in Canada and Mexico. I think I'll go there instead and give the United States a swerve in 2026.
Yeah, I've seen California tourism authorities predicting a 9% decline in foreign visits to the state this year. That's probably optimistic. But do we know why they're doing it? Have they provided any? We can speculate, and we may do in a moment, but is there any official indication of what the rationale is behind this?
Well, the official rationale for previously asking people voluntarily to disclose their social media account handles was because the United States government has the right, as all governments do, to decide who enters the country and who does not. And certainly we have seen social media accounts being scrubbed over the course of this year, particularly by the United States for any avowed expression of support for Hamas, for example, right, in the Gaza conflict. Now, it is also, if we move into the speculative realm, apparent that at a time of a complete crackdown here on, for example, refugee applications, asylum applications, I mean, America's doors, you know, the country that was built by immigrants, the Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island, all of that history, yeah, the country's doors are now basically closed to everybody, as you and I have previously discussed, with the exception of white Afrikaners seeking refuge. I mean, it is apparent that this government wants to start looking at people's backgrounds to see whether their viewpoints align with those of President Trump and the United States government. And where that line gets drawn, where they say, well, your viewpoints don't align with President Trump, if it goes beyond simply things that you've said about the situation in the Middle East, and, you know, we simply don't know where that line is going to be drawn. But, you know, they wouldn't be required all of these social media handles if they didn't intend to take a look at least some of them.
Well, I mean, how problem is with these questions that I ask you is that even if you answer in a certain way today, we could be here in a month and your answer would have been rendered obsolete, because obviously I want to know, and my listeners will want to know, whether merely expressing rather well-founded and evidence-based negative opinions about Donald Trump and his administration might prompt some sort of immigration problem in the future.
I think one has to conclude that that is a distinct possibility.
Yeah. Otherwise,
I mean, certainly earlier in the year, we saw Marco Rubio at the State Department, for example, going after several foreign students in the United States and threatening to throw them out and revoking their visas, although I think most of them in the end had their visas restored, but threatening to throw them out simply for participating in protests on university campuses during the course of this year relating to the crisis in Gaza. In at least one case, detaining a student simply because she had written an editorial for a student newspaper, absolutely covered by the First Amendment and its freedom of speech protections, but an editorial criticizing the university for failing to divest from Israel. So the bar was pretty low during the course of this year for things that irked the Trump administration. Yeah. And as we head into what I say, as I say, it's going to be a big year, should be a very big year in terms of tourist visits to the United States. And this goes beyond simply celebrating the 250th birthday or the World Cup. You might be invited to a conference. You might be thinking of attending a scientific conference or a conference on climate change and the environment, or a conference relating to, you know, the other dirty words here now, like inclusivity. You may find yourself being told by the Trump administration, I'm very sorry, some of the stuff you've said on social media is triggering for us, and we're not going to give you a visa and allow you to come in.
Well, I love the use of the word triggering there, because, of course, the people who've been whining about compromising and attacks on freedom of speech for the longest time will be signally silent about this, which is a very real and very dangerous attack on, potentially, on freedom of speech. When exactly, because I've got a couple more questions to get through, so short answer to this one, please. When does it potentially kick in?
I think in the new year. It will start, I mean, very, very soon. This is not something that Congress is going to be required to weigh in on. This is just an administrative change, and they'll simply change the box that says optional
when it comes to
social media.
Yeah, because it is currently
required.
It is currently on the form, but it is optional, and as of next year, it won't be, should this plan continue on the path it's currently on. Speaking of things that people might think twice about saying on social media when this policy is brought in, the administration has taken up piracy now, I gather.
Well, that is certainly the view of the Venezuelan government. I mean, this astonishing disclosure yesterday by President Trump that the United States has seized a Venezuelan oil tanker. It's called the Skipper. I mean, this gives us an indication of why the largest aircraft carrier in the world, the USS Gerald Ford, has been deployed in the waters of the Caribbean. According to the government, this tanker is a sanctioned vessel. I mean, that's clear. It is indeed a sanctioned vessel by the United States. They say it has been engaging in illicit oil trade involving both Venezuela and Iran, sanctioned oil that in the past, they argue, has generated revenue for Hezbollah and for the Islamic Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Why they suddenly seized this is a big question. It comes at a time, of course, when President Trump is actively threatening to overthrow President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. Indeed, yesterday, put the Colombian government on notice that their leadership will be next, he said. And when he was asked yesterday at the White House what happens to the oil on board this vessel, he said, I don't know, I guess we keep it. I mean, all of this fuels the notion that what the United States is really after in Venezuela is the country's oil, largest oil reserves anywhere in the world. And it also may be deflecting attention away from the extrajudicial killing that the United States has been engaged in on the high seas in those multiple attacks, over 20 of them, on speedboats that without proof they claim have been ferrying narcotics to the United States from Venezuela.
Without proof, and that story still bubbling away in the context of promises to reveal footage and then a failure, a refusal to reveal footage. We're out of time, but one more. This all falls into the same news cycle pretty much as the decision to pardon the former Honduran president, who was a massive and proven drug trafficker.
Yeah, absolutely. After voluminous amounts of work by Department of Justice prosecutors to bring him to justice, he's now walked free. President Trump maintaining that he was a victim of injustice, although there's absolutely no evidence to support that. In fact, the Honduran government has immediately said, we want to get our hands on him because we'll prosecute him and jail him if you, the United States, will not. But the dissonance here between an American president who's going after Venezuela, accusing President Nicolas Maduro of being himself a drug kingpin, something that the Venezuelan leader denies, while simultaneously releasing from jail the former Honduras leader, who was proved in court to have been engaged in drug trafficking activities. There is no clarity surrounding policy here, particularly when it comes to this array of pardons and prisoners season releases that Donald Trump has been making since he arrived in office. Very quixotic. And what he's really trying to do, I think, is demonstrate that former presidents should not be held accountable for their actions while they were in power, for reasons, of course, that may one day come to benefit him.
It's the oligarch club. Thank you, Simon Marks, live from Washington, D.C. And in conclusion, just to put a little flesh on one of the bones that he brought to us, why wouldn't you, given what we have just learned or discovered, why wouldn't you want to give this administration not just your social media activity potentially for the past 5 years, but any phone number that you've used over the same period, the email addresses that you've used for a decade, your face, fingerprint, DNA and iris biometrics, the names, addresses, birth dates and birthplaces of all family members, including children, will be required as well. As we mentioned a moment ago, no doubt all of the people who whine endlessly about free speech because they're cross about women who want hotels full of human beings to be burnt to the ground while the human beings are still inside them, being quite rightly sent to jail, will be around any minute now to object in the most furious of terms about this obscene infringement of, well, just about every imaginable right going. Just don't hold your breath. It's Mystery Hour next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned there is a tidal wave of flu tearing through our hospitals. More than 2,600 patients were in a hospital bed with flu every day last week, the highest ever for this time of year. That figure for England was up by 55% on the previous 7 days. Mark Dyan from the Nuffield Trust says the NHS is already under huge pressure.
The usual winter problems that we have in the NHS are fairly largely driven by people needing to be admitted with respiratory conditions like flu, like more recently COVID-19. Unfortunately, it has been, we've seen in Australia during their winter, they had a very difficult flu season quite early. And I think there are real signs that's happening here too.
British Medical Association leaders have played down the prospect of resident doctors calling off their pre-Christmas strike. They say a new offer from the government is a mixed bag because it does nothing on pay. The main concession is an expansion of specialist training posts. Dr. Arjan Singh is deputy chair of the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee.
90% of our membership were balloted on pay, and there's obviously no significant movement at all on pay. And in terms of jobs, whilst the solution that they've described to us in the room, you know, would go a significant way, that's not been relayed to members by the government. So I don't understand how our members are meant to analyse this information.
Medics are due to walk out for 5 days from next Wednesday, with a result of their ballot due on Monday. More than 600 artefacts have been stolen from a collection belonging to Bristol Museum. Detectives have released CCTV of four men entering a building in the city on September the 25th. President Zelensky is to hold urgent talks with leaders and officials from about 30 allies of Ukraine. Keir Starmer is among those set to take part in the video link meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing. Kiev remains under huge pressure from Donald Trump for a swift settlement with Russia. Officers will have to declare any membership of the Freemasons under new Metropolitan Police rules. It follows concerns among officers that membership can affect perceptions of police impartiality and hurt public trust. And millions of people are to be offered extra help with their investments and pensions. The FCA watchdog is changing the rules to allow banks to make investment recommendations for the first time. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 16 points at 96.71. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places staying dry and bright, but becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in western Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
Brum Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
I'm actually overcome with excitement. I've got so much amazing news to share with you. Not just the Global Player Peace Prize brackets, weekdays only, mid-morning show, LBC category, close brackets, but also we're live on TikTok. Live on TikTok. Don't forget to do the things that I always forget you need to do, but Keith reminds me and I pretend I remembered. Keith, please. Hit like and subscribe. But also, the most exciting imaginable news, Christmas has come early on the James O'Brien Experience. The Mystery Hour game is here. The new game, the pocket size, the one in a tin, the one I've been telling you about for months. It's here, it's available, you can buy it. We've already broken one website today. Wren's Pantry, who kindly sent me a lovely Christmas present. Let's see if we can break the Mystery Hour website as well, the Mystery Hour game website, over at mysteryhour.co.uk. The game has changed. It is no longer... My mother-in-law struggled with this, but I hope she doesn't mind me sharing that with you. You are no longer required to make up your own wrong answer to the question. So the Mystery Hour board game provides three answers to a question. One is correct, one is made up and provided by us, and one you were required to make up yourself for mega points. But that obviously complicates matters somewhat. It's fine if you're all sitting around a table. It's fine if you're playing the traditional board game, which is still available at mysteryhour.co.uk. But if you're on the move, if you are, haven't got all of the gubbins present, in some ways you can just keep the card as a way of keeping score. Then on the new game, which is pocket-sized and comes in a very shapely tin, you have all of the answers provided. So it's still got one correct answer and two wrong answers. But the two wrong answers are all provided by us. They're all on the card. They're all provided by the game. So you can use your theatrical skills, your thespian gifts, to try to imbue as you read them out. A bit like when I do a multiple choice on the programme, when I say, for example, Nigel Farage has just been paid £135,000 by a gold bullion company. Did he do A, 12 weeks work for them? Did he do B, 12 days work for them? Or did he do C, 12 hours work for them? I can use my voice and my theatrical skills to try to put you off the scent or try and give you clues, and that's what you do when you're playing the all-new In a Tin Mystery Hour game. You can find out more about that at mysteryhour.co.uk. You don't need a tin opener. It has a perfect little pop top, I believe is the technical term. And you can still get the original, of course, the big one, Mystery Hour 1.0, live on TikTok. You might want to be careful about this, because if they were to do a quick search of your socials as you tried to get into the United States of America for next year's World Cup and they saw this, then that might be problematic. I don't know. I mean, maybe the First Amendment will have kicked back in again by the time the first whistle is blown at the World Cup. But in the meantime, do bear in mind that having me on your socials could prove an issue if you're trying to get into Donald Trump's America. What's the other bit I have to do at this point? My favourite contribution of the week will win a Mystery Hour game. I think for now, I need to check with Greg, who runs the company that makes the games, that we can do both, that we're not, you can choose. You can have either the big box or the small tin. The big box or the little tin. But my favourite contribution of the week will win one or the other, whichever you prefer. I mean, the big box is worth more, but the little tin has the novelty of being brand new. So if you were to pull it out in company, people would get very excited. Matron. And that, of course, is a proper competition governed by all the rules of the fair and indeed the game. And you can find the T's and C's, as we call them in the trade, at lbc.co.uk. Hello, TikTok. Shall we get this underway? Oh, I haven't even told you what it is yet. This is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. So if you have a problem, a mystery, a riddle, a conundrum, something that you know must have an answer, but you're dashed if you know what that answer is, then give us a ring, 0345 6060 973. And if you know the answer to a question that somebody else asks, then I think you can work out what I expect you to do in those circumstances. Give us a ring, 0345 6060 973. Favourite of the week wins a prize. That's it, really. That's how it works. Don't generally like motoring questions. Used to have loads of rules, but they've all withered and died. with the passing years as my dander limps towards ever closer to the finish line. That'll do, right? And of course, I've gone on for rather long at this point, so as Lee points out, it's going to be mystery 45 minutes at this rate. Let's crack on. John's in Dublin. John, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James. How are you doing?
Very well indeed.
So, look, I was in London visiting my son there a few weeks back.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to take the underground on a couple of trips.
God, I bet you took your life. Do you not read American far-right racist media, mate? You can't be travelling around on the London Underground. You could have got your arms stolen.
Yeah, I know.
Carry on.
But look, he kept pressing me over to the right-hand side of the travelator as they go down.
Oh, yes.
And he said for people to rush by on the left.
Yes.
And I said to him, well, look, if we drive on the left and we overtake on the right, why doesn't the same logic apply to the travelators?
Yeah, that's a good question.
We're bordering onto the motoring question here, so I hope you won't...
It's not a motoring question. It's a London Underground question. Are you... currently on the phone rather than the speaker. Are you speaking to me directly down your phone line?
Absolutely.
So you have a phone in your hand?
In my love.
In which hand is it?
The left hand.
Oh, this hasn't gone very well. Does that mean you're left-handed?
No, I'm right-handed, as it happens.
Why are you holding it? Can we do this again? Why are you holding your phone in your left hand if you're right-handed?
Force a habit, perhaps. I have no idea.
Well,
it leaves my hand. It leaves my right hand free to write or do, whatever.
Yeah.
At the same time, take down notes.
Okay. Let's leave it at that. And of course, the fact that you would need your right hand to write with is because you favour your right hand. So, with which hand, were it to be grasping the handrail of an escalator, with which hand would you feel safer? With your right hand on the handrail or with your left hand on the handrail?
Wow, never thought of that
way. I know you did. I thought you'd thrown me there when you revealed you were holding the phone in your left hand. It would have not made sense to you as you were making your way down the escalator because you'd feel safer leaning to the left. But you're right-handed, so you're safer leaning to the right, therefore you hold it on the right, and therefore that is why we do it, I reckon.
You solved the problem, is that it?
I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, I can't imagine what else it would be, but whenever I say that live on the radio, I end up being embarrassed 14 minutes later. In the meantime, I'm taking a round of applause in the meantime. It is because we are almost all, well, very, very disproportionately right-handed, and that you are much safer on the right, right? 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 Yes. Thank you, John. Was it a good visit? Did you see a show? Did you catch a show, John?
No, it's just over for today.
Okay.
He bought an apartment, and he wanted to show it to me. And
I bet he did. He's done well.
That was all.
Defying all the cliches, a young person who's able to buy a property and indeed visiting London from overseas without having all four of your limbs stolen by balaclava-wearing youths. Well done, John. I make the opposite journey, the other way, actually, quite often at the moment for similar reasons. Mark's in Durham. Mark, question or answer?
Hi, I've got a question.
Carry on.
Hiya, how are you, James? All right?
I'm grand, yeah, how are you? You're not even Irish. I only spoke to an Irishman 2 minutes ago and I've started saying grand again. It's pathetic, really. What have you got for me?
I'm a past winner, by the way. I answered the question about why a tea towel was called a tea towel about 18 months ago. I'm not sure if you remember.
I remember your accent, I do. I can I remember, yes, it was a beautiful answer. Did you win?
Yes, I won it that week, yes, I did, aye.
And just tell us how you're getting on with the game.
Well, it comes out at Christmas time, so it'll be coming out in another couple of weeks' time after Christmas dinner.
That's a perfect.
Post-prandial
Christmas entertainment. And that's the old family box size game now, of course. And I suppose, hang on a minute.
It might come in time for this Christmas.
Well, I'm just thinking, do we wipe the slate clean now and previous winners are allowed to win again? It's unlikely to pop up much. It's just that you happen to be here this week when we're giving away the new tin-based guide. Exactly. Anyway, it's unlikely lightning can strike twice. What's the question?
My question is, why are eggs sold in sixes and twelves historically? I know you can buy them in packs of 10 now, but why historically were they always sold in packs of six, half a dozen, and packs of 12, eggs?
That question. I don't remember seeing them in 12s as a kid, do you? I don't remember big boxes.
Not really, no, because you always went to the butcher's for eggs, didn't you?
Yeah.
So this came about because I went to a farm shop recently and I asked for six eggs.
Mm.
No, sorry, I got four eggs. I only wanted four. And then the woman at the till still charges for six eggs.
Yeah, so you went back and got the other two, did you?
No, because I was going away. So my dogs have eggs on a morning.
Right.
So I only needed
four eggs
for two mornings.
So you paid for six and took
four. For six. So, yeah.
Couldn't you have given a couple of eggs to a likely looking fellow in the car park or something like that?
But I didn't.
She didn't have the ability to charge you for four eggs. She was always going to charge for six.
That was what I asked her. I says, why can't you just divide it by six and then times it by four and I'll pay the correct money?
Yeah.
No, we'll always sell six or 12 eggs, and I was just... So that obviously got us onto the question, why do we buy six eggs or why do we buy 12 eggs now?
And you mentioned a farm shop. Is that because you actually put the eggs in the box yourself?
Yes.
So that's why you found... Because, I mean, people not familiar with farm shops might have imagined you in Morrison's trying to balance the two eggs you don't want on the edge of the shelf.
No, definitely not.
Which, obviously, shopkeepers would have to discourage, Mark, wouldn't they?
Yes.
You can't be going around interfering with egg boxes on the grounds that you don't want to buy six, you only want to buy four. You can't do it with Rolos. Why would you be allowed to do it with eggs? But,
Why?
Six. And 12. I mean, a dozen. Half. That's a great question. I'm putting it on the board. I can't believe we've never had it before. We may have done, but if we have, I've forgotten. And if I don't know the answer, then it counts. It's a question. It's there. Why are eggs always dealt with, sold, bought and sold in the half dozen? Or, you know, latterly the dozen. And I've done the other one, haven't I? Lovely question. Thank you, Mark. 12:18 is the time. Two calls down, which means two phone lines have been freed since you tried to get through a minute ago and couldn't. So, 0345-6060-973.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Waitrose presents...
Hello. Good to see you.
Festive Fizz offers. One host raises a glass to her friend's new beginnings. Starring fresh and fruity San Leo Prosecco.
To your lovely new place.
Rich, creamy night timber.
To your promotion.
And Bollinger, with notes of roasted apple.
And to you, finally passing your driving test.
Seventh time lucky.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, at the Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345-6060-973.
19 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us, replete with the brand new Mystery Hour game. It's in a tin. You need a catchphrase, right, for a new product? You know? Like, it's finger-licking good. That works. Do they still do that for KFC? I hope so. It's a wonderful catchphrase. Can you think of any other catchphrases? A glass and a half in every bar? For kebabs, probably. See, the toffee crisp can't be called a chocolate bar anymore because they've reduced the amount of cocoa in it. So I mentioned online one of my favourite chocolate-covered snacks, and it turned out the company that makes it supported Brexit, so I'm not even going to be able to eat that anymore. Well, of course I am. I'm not that silly. Actually, am I? I don't know. Sometimes I see a Dyson hand dryer in the gents, and I think, oh, I'll just use a paper towel instead. It's as if Dyson gets any money every time I use a Dyson hand dryer. But I do have a weird legacy, particularly the very rich people that made life worse for everybody else and just waltzed off into the sunset or Singapore. In the aftermath. But you need a catchphrase. If you've got a very exciting product, you need a little catchphrase, right? A slogan. Never knowingly undersold is a popular one from John Lewis. So the new Mystery Hour game, it's in a tin. That sings, right? That's a good, see what TikTok think about it. I'll do it in a proper advertising style-y. It's the new Mystery Hour game. It's in a tin. Yeah? Yeah. Vic's in Dorking. Vic. Interrupt me quickly. Question or answer?
A question.
Carry on, Vic.
What I want to know is why human beings have evolved to enjoy music.
I mean, we may have always liked music.
What, even when we were apes or something?
Yeah. I mean, not obviously Beethoven sonatas, because Beethoven hadn't existed then. But I think it might be similar, Vic, to the question we had last week about why we like white noise when we're sleeping, because it emulates...
Oh, see, I didn't hear last week.
That's okay, don't worry. It emulates the noises that we heard in the womb. So if you think about a heartbeat...
Yes.
You have the ground floor of music, don't you?
Yes, but wouldn't it explain how it evolved into liking either 60s music, jazz?
I think
it
would.
It's almost like it's a gift from God.
But you start with the bass.
Enjoy, like sex and eating and friendship,
yes,
can be explained in evolutionary terms.
Yeah, I mean, if you started with the bass, it's all about the bass.
Yes.
If you started with the bass, and then that is the basis of music, and that is an echo of the heartbeat, so the reason why we find it soothing, or the reason why we like it, would be because dum 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 dum. I can hear your foot tapping from here, Vic. Dum.
Oh, I was tapping.
I know you were tapping. There it goes. And then you add on to that, then you start warbling. I mean, I'm going to put your question on the board, but I suspect it's got something to do with the heartbeat. Somewhere in that, and that's why I question the idea of it being it's an evolution of music, but not necessarily an evolution of our fondness for music.
No.
Sitting around a campfire, early humans, one of them starts telling a story and singing music, bird song. I don't know. Really, why do humans like music? Could be the question, couldn't it?
Oh, I could have said that. Why they like it? Yeah, rather than why they evolved.
I might like that.
I've got a confession.
Oh no! Careful.
I spend 8 hours, probably 10 hours a day, listening to LBC.
Yeah.
But I only listen to it. I was one ear, and on my other ear, I listen to 60s or music or Irish music.
Okay. I mean, so
you listen to Billy Shirley, Eden Kane, Paul Anka, Dusty Springfield.
So you've got two earphones plugged into different things.
Well, I just put what I have your radio on without an earphone.
Yeah.
I just use the other ear, just use the right ear.
Is there any combinations that work particularly well? Like, I don't know, sort of Nick Ferrari and Vera Brittain, Vera Lynn, for example.
Oh, well, yeah, I like Vera Lynn.
No, but do any presenters go particularly well with any performers? Like, I don't know, Ian Payne and The Prodigy, perhaps?
I haven't really thought of that. I think you probably would like jazz, wouldn't you?
I like a bit of jazz, yeah. I tell you what, Sheila Fogarty in one ear, Cradle of Filth in the other. I can't do that, Vic, sadly. I have to concentrate entirely on the LBC output, but I am intrigued by your listening habits, and I will endeavour to get you to an answer to the question. I like that idea. So it's sort of background noise, but not background noise. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. God bless, Vic. Stay safe. Jack's in Bedford. Jack, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
So last Sunday, I was in Wells next to the sea,
yes,
and we were walking down the beach.
Yes.
And there was just piles and piles of razor clams and oyster shells. And it started me thinking, is how do shellfish breed with each other?
In the seabed.
Yeah, but do they crawl through the sand and find each other? Like, do they come out of their shells?
Boom, 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 boom. You missed that. Seabed. Breed bed.
Oh.
Yeah?
There we go.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
No
day.
Also, how pedantic... Do you think, how pedantic will you permit me to be?
As much as you like.
There's no two, it's Wells next to sea.
Sorry,
apologise. That's quite all right. Just, you know, my fellow Norfolk fans will expect me to pick up on that. Just jotting down Vic's question about music. And we have, how do they breed? I've got one idea. Because just from watching David Attenborough, that... It all happens in the water. So you release... What you do is you climb on the back of the clam that you fancy. That doesn't work, does it? Because you're a clam and you're in a shell.
Yeah.
Does it come out of the shell? It's a very good question, Robin. Sorry, Jack. It's a very good question. Robin's next. What's your theory?
I was thinking about fish, and I know that fish lay eggs on rocks, then another fish will come past and...
Yeah, that's right.
Them,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But then I was thinking, do the shellfish come out of their shell to do that?
Yeah.
obviously, razor clams live in the sand, don't they? So how do they find each other in the sand?
Yeah, they do. How do mollusks breed?
Yeah.
It's the question we never knew we needed the answer to, Jack, isn't it?
No.
What did you get up to in Wells Next to Sea? Anything nice?
It was my partner's birthday, so we walked down the beach and then we sat in the harbour car park and had fish and chips in the rain.
Lovely.
It was very lovely.
It is
got
nice.
A bit damp.
Did you go to Platten's?
I'm not sure.
You don't remember which chippy you went to.
The one exactly opposite the harbour car park on the corner by the roundabout.
Yeah, okay. I know. Yeah, that's done rather well in the competitions recently. Did you pop into the arcade? Did you go into the Penny Arcade?
It was closed, actually.
Was it? It's never closed.
Yeah. That's there outrageous. Wasn't many people there. It was very rainy.
Oh, it's very off-season as well.
It is.
Beautiful place. Highly recommended.
It's my favourite place.
It's my favourite place as well. I'll see you there one day, no doubt.
Hopefully so.
I look forward to it. Jack, you're on the list. There we go. How do mollusks breed? 0345 606 0973. Shellfish, mollusks. What's the difference? I don't know. Robin's in Murfield. I told you Robin was next. Question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question. Sorry, I'm a bit flustered. I was cackling at your seabed joke.
Well, I thought it deserved more, frankly, Robin. And clearly it was getting more in Murfield, but it was getting next to nothing in Bedford. What's your question?
My question is, why is, in the army, the officers' mess, your mess tins, your mess kit, why is it called mess? What is that from? My dad was in the army, in parachute regiment, and I'd often hear about these things, mess tins and stuff, and I've always been interested,
it's
but
a good
I've
one.
Never known what it means.
No,
I
don't know
where it comes from.
I like it. I just very much got the feeling of someone that we've done before. I just got little bells tinkling in the back of my mind. It'd be a miracle if we haven't, because it's such a good question, but I can't remember the answer, so you're absolutely on the board. The mess, so, I mean, does it refer to food, and it refers to refreshments in every context, does it?
In some ways, but also, I mean, the officers have a place where they can relax, you know, a bit like a common room or something like that, and it's called, the officers' mess, but then there's also the mess hall. I mean, I think that's where you go and get your food.
It is. Yeah, it's always got something to do with mess. I'm trying to think of other languages or a little. No, I love it. You're on the board. I like it a lot. Why do officers and squad? Why does the military have a mess for its refreshments and its meals and also its equipment, the accoutrements with which you eat your food has got mess in it as well, mess tins. I like that. It is coming up to 12:30. You're listening to Mystery Hour. We want to know why eggs are dealt in dozens, why humans like music, why, I've written that down, I can't read my own writing, why the military has its food and drink in a mess? What's the mess got to do with the grub? And how do shellfish breed? If you know the number, if you know the answer to that, you hopefully know the number. If you don't, it's 0345 606 0973. And don't forget, why do you make me do this? What do I get out of punting TikTok? Is there a bonus at the end of the year? Do I get another reward? You just get to see my face. Oh, wow, there you go. What's not to like? Oh, and don't forget, the new Mystery Hour game. It's in a tin. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The Prime Minister has told LBC there are no plans to change guidance on face masks following what's been described as a tidal wave of flu cases. But Sir Keir Starmer says people should be taking a common sense approach to avoid passing the virus on. The British Medical Association is playing down the possibility of calling off strikes by resident doctors in England next week. They say a new offer from the government being put to members is a mixed bag because it does nothing on pay. And homelessness charities have warned that ministers are falling short of dealing with a crisis in the UK. The government's published a new plan to tackle rough sleeping and stop children being housed in B&Bs. LBC weather mostly dry this afternoon with a mixture of cloud and bright spells. Rain moving into the northwest, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC. Everything has led to this moment. The Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. Two decades of evolution have created the refined SUV with true Porsche performance. With enhanced personalization, athletic detailing, and high gloss black finish, the Black Edition isn't just driven, it's felt. This is the moment where style meets precision. The brand new Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. 20 years in the making. To book your test drive,
Search Porsche Guildford or visit Porsche.co.uk. Porsche, there is no substitute.
I'm Professor Huggington, and I like to hug.
When your kid's favourite toy starts to run out of battery power, no need to worry. Your new batteries are already on their way, arriving today with Amazon Prime. Everyday essentials delivered fast. It's on Prime.
I'm Professor Huggington, and I like to hug.
Cut-off times and T's and C's apply. See product page when ordering.
The halls are decked with guaranteed wins every Friday in December on the Sky Vegas prize machine. It's free to play. Simply opt in and spin to win. Each prize comes with its own terms and expiry dates. Play Prize Machine and join over 1 million winners this year. There's so much to unwrap this festive season at Sky Vegas. Mini game must be played for bonus rounds feature. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+ gamblerware.org.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:32. I should have checked. It's officially called the James O'Brien Mystery Hour Travel Game. It's in a tin. Not the new or the mini or it's so the James O'Brien Mystery Hour Travel Game. There you go. $12.99 to you. It's in a tin. Back to the original Mystery Hour, but not necessarily the best. Mo's in Birmingham. Mo, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Mo.
Both me and my wife use our phones to set an alarm and, you know, to help us wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, during the weekdays, her alarm goes off about 25, 30 minutes earlier than mine.
Yeah.
I could sleep through her alarm.
Oh.
But I wake up when my alarm goes off. And then on weekends,
yeah,
she has a bit of a lie-in. Yeah. My alarm goes off. She could sleep through my alarm. And I was wondering whether there was some sort of biological science behind that.
I mean, you're in the same house, are you?
Yes. Same house, same bed.
Just checking.
And there is an extension to it. At the moment, our youngest doesn't want to sleep in her bed. She's
no.
jumped in with us.
Oh, that's nice.
And she sleeps through both alarms.
Yeah, I know why. I think I know why. So, after your wife's alarm goes off, she gets up before you, does she? Does she creep out of the...
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. So, you're both turning off the alarms. So, she turns off her alarm before it wakes you up. If she left it on for a while, it would wake her up. And she recognises her alarm. That's a little bit of kind of, you know, mental conditioning. And then you recognise your alarm, so you turn yours off. But if her is going off later than yours, then you're turning it off before it wakes her up at weekends, and she's turning hers off before it wakes you up on weekdays. And you're both turning it off in time to stop your daughter from waking up. So to test this, really, you both have to set your alarms to the normal time, but not turn them off.
Right, so you think it's a matter of timing?
Then you'd all be awake. You'd all be awake.
All right. Okay, then.
Well, hang on, you sound a bit more excited about it. I've just solved the biggest mystery in your life.
at this moment in time, yeah.
That's incredible work by me. I should get another prize or award or something for this.
Well,
it must be that, right? It's the only thing that fits the available evidence, especially with the addition of your daughter to the mix.
Yeah, possibly.
What do you mean, possibly?
Well, I just think that during the... Well, is it a matter of timing here?
It's not just timing. It's the fact that you turn it off before it... Your wife turns it off before it wakes you up. And then at the weekends, you turn yours off before it wakes her up.
There is one slight flaw. Why don't we not wake up at the same moment then?
Because you... Do you have different alarms, right? Different noises.
No, it's the same phone. It's the same ringtone.
Oh, rats. That's torn it a bit. Hang on a minute. 12:36. I can't go to a break while I try and work this one out. It's exactly the same ringtone. It's not the same phone, though, is it?
It is the same phone.
It's not the same phone.
Very well-known...
No, because she takes the phone with her when she gets up.
Occasionally she keeps it right next to her bed.
So when you say the same phone, you mean the same model of phone, but different phones?
Correct.
Yeah. So where is your phone?
right next to my ear.
And where is her phone?
Right next to her ear.
Ergo, QED, it wakes you up because you're nearer to it, and in order to wake her up, it would have to stay on for longer.
Even though it's only maybe a meter away?
It's a long way. It can be a long way, a meter, when it comes to alarms.
Right.
Again, you don't sound very excited.
Not very convinced.
How can you? How dare you say that? Seriously, because what else could it possibly
be? I think the fact that the daughter remains asleep during both.
Yeah, but she wouldn't if you left either of them on for longer.
Mm.
It would wake her up. It's because you hear it. It's right next to your ear. You turn it off. You get up. You're still asleep in your wife's case. Then at weekends, you hear it. It's right next to your ear. You turn it off. You get up, and she's still asleep. Because it hasn't, and your daughter sleeps through both of it because she is in the sweet spot between the two of you, I presume, and yeah. And doesn't get woken up by the proximity on either occasion. She's, in a way, she's the control in this experiment.
Right.
You sound gloriously unimpressed. I'm quite hurt.
I think there's merit. I just think that...
Oh, no, all right. I mean, to be honest, mate...
At the same time, these alarms are quite all-encompassing in the room.
Yeah.
As if it's slightly quieter down my end and louder down her end.
Okay, I'm getting quite a lot of abuse in my inbox now for the quality of my answer. So as a born Democrat, Mo, I'm going to lean towards your slightly rude scepticism and abandon my enthusiastic confidence.
Oh, I apologise for the rudeness.
That's
but,
okay.
Yeah,
that's
it would okay. be good to get
nobody's
a
perfect.
Third party.
Yeah, okay, very politely put. Well, how come Mo sleeps through his wife's alarm, and then she sleeps through his alarm at weekends, and neither alarm wakes up their daughter? 03456060973. Mo, take care. Steve is in Oxshott. Steve, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Thanks for having me on. The word mess.
Yes.
It's an old French word meaning a portion of food or dish.
Go on.
Well, it was initially, they used to call it if there's a group of people eating mess mates, and that was then changed to mess room where they were eating, and eventually it got shortened to either officer's mess or the NCO's mess or sergeant's mess.
What's the French word?
You're asking. I think...
Je ne sais pas.
it comes from the Latin word, I think.
The Latin word for table is messa. It suddenly occurred
to me. Messa, yeah, something like that. Yeah, Latin word. It comes from that.
Messa table. Qualifications?
I served in the Household Cavalry Lifeguards for 15 years.
Fair enough. So a bit of French or Latin.
Yeah.
Messa, meaning table. What would the French word be? Meta to put? What's to put in French, Elliot? Metre. Youth of today, honestly. They never study modern languages. It's a crying shame. Metre to put. So putting it on a table, putting it in front of you. I'm going to give you a round of applause, but do not be surprised, Steve, if it gets challenged.
Well, it probably will. Somebody from the Paras of the Marines.
Yeah, all right. Just keep your beef for your reunions, all right? Don't come on this show and start it with your military competitions, okay? You're all the same in my eyes. I don't have any favourites. Have a round of applause. 20 minutes to one is the time. Do you know, many weeks... Oh, a mess of pottage in the Bible as well. A mess of pottage, is that going to be... I don't know. Is that Jacob and Esau? I forget. It's the hairy one, isn't it? Anyway, I usually preface Mystery Hour by promising a laugh-out-loud moment in the course of the programme, and I think I should have done that today, because I can think of at least three occasions where I've laughed out loud, so... If I'm making myself laugh on that kind of scale, then hopefully I'm making you laugh too. John is in Kingston upon Thames. John, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, John.
Right, so I was out for a walk this morning in Richmond Park, where I live.
Yes.
Very nice.
Isn't it just?
And there were loads of deer, and they were perfectly camouflaged against the dead bracken. You just could not see them from a distance. But you can smell them from miles away.
Yes.
It's not a bad smell, but you can smell them.
It's a very distinctive aroma. Well, it could be horses, couldn't it, to the uninitiated? It's got that kind
of... It could
be. Yeah, I know the smell you mean.
Yeah, but the question then is, why don't...
Oh, no, the phone's gone. Oh, get John back, quick. We need, in fact, I'll go from one John to another. They're like buses, Johns, aren't they? You wait ages for one to come along and then suddenly there's two at once. This one's in Southwold. John, question or answer?
Answer, James. Good morning.
Good morning, John. What have you got?
Why the people of London stand on the right and walk on the left.
Oh, was I wrong?
I didn't actually hear your answer because I was obviously telling your helper why it is.
I presumed it was because we're mostly right-handed and you're holding the handrail. But go on, you've got a better answer. I can sense it.
I believe that the original escalator on the underground was set up at Earl's Court.
Mm.
And in this Edwardian age with ladies' frocks at low level,
yeah,
they were concerned about it getting kind of fed into the mechanism. So when you came off the top, instead of coming straight off the escalator, there was a sort of curve to the guides of you that you came off, and the guide was to the left.
Oh.
And they obviously came to the conclusion that the people moving on the left were coming off so much faster.
Right.
But it was better that they weren't crossing the stationary people who would have been standing on the left.
Okay.
And so they said, you will stand on the right here, and you will walk on the left.
Walk on the left, stand on the right. I can make sense of that. I can see what you're describing. What are your qualifications?
I have none other than about 3 weeks ago, having seen a lot of TikToks of people going, why can they do this? Why are they so horrible to us? And I'm thinking, well, I'm a Londoner,
I had one yesterday and a bloke was getting quite irate and his wife was in front of him with a pushchair, a pram. But you couldn't see that because it had backed right up. It was on one of the big escalators as well. I think it was Holborn. And there's a little bit of me as a sort of adopted Londoner that wanted to intervene and just say, look, give him a break. Because all the Londoners are like whistling from the top of the escalator. Get out, can you move? And the guy's had it twice. I followed him down two escalators and he got it twice and his wife's in front of him and he's, oh dear. Yeah, we're not at our best on escalators, are we, as a species, us Londoners? But
we're not. So when I saw all these, why do we do that? And about 3 weeks ago, I went and found out.
And here we are. And it's earned you this. I like it. It's a lovely answer. Better than mine. Well played. We were talking about Wells Next to Sea not just a moment ago. Extraordinarily good fish and chips in Southwold. Oh, he's gone. I was about to go all anecdotal with him. Back to John in Kingston-on-Thames. A number of people, when you started talking about the deer in Richmond Park, the number of messages I got, which wouldn't make much sense to many people, going, Fenton! Fenton!
Oh, yeah,
Fenton! Except for Mark. Mark, who somehow has come up with Benson. So he's watched that video, goodness knows how many times, and he's misheard.
That video is so old, that must be, what, 15 years old?
It was one of the very first, for historians of the future, that will be one of the first viral clips, I think, that clip of the man walking his dog in Richmond Park, and the dog hares off after the deer, and he chases after his big old dog as well, like an Irish wolfhound or something like that, shouting. Must have just been on the cusp of the technology becoming widespread and clips appearing on our phones, and that was one of the very first ones to go bonkers, wasn't it? Anyway, where were we? Where were we?
We were talking about why is it that the deer smell and don't camouflage the smell. And a more general question would be, is there any animal that
The phone line's gone again. I've got the question, but I want the phone line to be, because I think this is quite a nice one to answer, isn't it? So the deer is herbivorous, right?
Yeah.
So why would it need to camouflage its smell?
Because a wolf, if there were a wolf in Richmond Park, could smell it a mile off, but it's quite hard to see.
To hide itself from a predator.
Camouflaged.
See, there's two reasons for the camouflage. One, to hide you from predators, and then one, to hide you from prey. So I'm immediately thinking of prey. I'm thinking of the fact, because the answer to your question is yes. Do animals camouflage their smell? Why do dogs roll in fox poo?
Yeah, but why would they want to smell like...
Dogs are lovely creatures, but they roll in fox poo to camouflage their own aroma, I think, for some reason.
Right.
In order to creep up on foxes, probably, so that they're not alerting the fox to their presence.
Yeah.
So that is the answer. I think Fenton was a black Labrador, actually, just for the fact fans. That will be it.
But that is a very... behavioural camouflage,
have you ever seen a deer? Look at the size of it. It's not going to be able to put a fox or put a wolf off the scent by wearing perfume. It's about 8 feet tall with its antlers.
But what if it smelt like a lion? A wolf would run a mile. Why doesn't
it's not blind.
Why haven't they developed
the wolf is not blind, but if you can't see it, sniffing around, looking for the deer.
Yeah.
Sniffing around, or think of any animal predator, a lion in the savannah, sniffing around, it smells its prey.
Yeah,
the
okay.
prey is yes, possibly it's... not even seen.
That's quite, yeah. Why
right. haven't they developed that?
Do any animals camouflage their smell in order to elude predators, is the question.
Exactly, it's or a great spoof question. Another animal's smell, yeah. that sort of thing.
It's
yeah,
a great
yeah,
question. Yeah. Okay, you're on. Yeah. Thank you, John. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. The time is 12:47. We've done the escalator. We haven't done the eggs. We haven't done the music. We haven't done the shellfish. We've done the mess. I think we did the alarms, but Mo was gloriously unappreciative, quite frankly. And we've done the, and we haven't done the animals. So there's quite a lot to get through, and there is only 10 minutes left. 12:47 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
On the flu surge, Keir Starmer says no new guidance on masking, just use common sense. But what is that? And sextremist Bonnie Blue backs Nigel Farage, of course.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out. They've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing. And then there's the Bet Builder. And, of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Rednap. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. You normally see me in the shops, but you know where I'd really like to be? Round yours at Christmas. I'm a great Christmas guest. You can use me as a festive place setting for a bit of fun. And you might even win a few quid. At the very least, I'll distract Uncle Dave from saying something inappropriate.
Oh. Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Cork, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
10 to 1 is the time. You know, you can actually buy little bottles of stag scent. It's very dear. Before I get back to Mystery Hour, something that I want to tell you about. The winners of the Global Player Awards 2025 have been announced this morning. The News Agents wins the Best Podcast Show, officially the most listened to podcast on Global Player. And the biggest new podcast is Christiane Amanpour Presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin. Both brilliant, brilliant programmes, podcasts. For the full list and to listen to both of these award-winning shows, head to Global Player. And if you're wondering why I'm not bitter, well, it's pretty obvious, really.
Please welcome the very first winner of
the Global Player
Peace Prize.
It's James O'Brien.
Oh, one of the proudest days of my life. Danny is in Lewis. Danny, question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got an answer.
Carry on.
This is how shellfish breathe. So, obviously, most of them can't move. So what happens is the males will release the sperm and the females release the eggs directly into the water. And that's like a very well-synchronized event. So they do it exactly the same time. And then just in the water, the sperm and eggs mix. They find each other and fertilize each other. So if you're close enough to a mussel bed at this particular moment, you'll actually be able to see the kind of milkiness in the water as they're doing that.
Wow. Wow. And it holds true right across the I don't know what it would be, the phylum, is it? Whatever the technical term is. So it would have bivalves, razor clams, mollusks, razor clams, mussels, cockles, winkles.
That's right. Yeah.
What's the one I don't like? What's the one I don't like, Danny? The one that's really chewy. No, I love an oyster, mate. Don't get me wrong. I'm a champagne socialist. What's the really, really, like, gristly one?
I don't know. I like winkle? Them all, but razor clams can be a bit kind of... Winkles are not a bivalve. That's a little snail.
Yeah, that's the point. What's the one I'm thinking of? Anyway, it doesn't matter. What are your qualifications?
So I work in aquaculture, so that's basically fish or seafood species farming.
Oh, lovely.
I've got studies in that as well.
Farming for the hospitality industry?
Yeah.
Love it. Well, I mean, what do you do? Do you do them all? I mean, the big money's in oysters, isn't it?
At the moment, I work for an NGO, but I was a trout farmer. Before that, I was worked in sea bass and sea bream for a little bit, and also some freshwater perch out in Switzerland.
I love it. Whelks, I'm thinking of, are the ones I don't like.
That's not a bivalve, that's another snail.
Is it? You know, you know your stuff, don't you?
I'll contribute to another question. It's not an answer, but I'll contribute to the why do we like music?
Yeah, why not?
Turns out it's not just us that likes music, actually. Fish also like music. There's various studies that show that fish will grow faster if you play a Mozart.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you live in... There's a Marillion joke in there somewhere, but I'm tired and I've been too funny already this hour. I can't reach for another one.
That's nearly lunchtime, isn't it?
With whelks and winkles, would they would procreate in a rather more traditional fashion, wouldn't they? They'd hop on each other.
I think they would.
They'd hop on each other. Okay, that's really interesting. And that is a brilliant answer, Danny. I really like that.
Thank you.
And it's earned you this. I kind of thought that, didn't I? I kind of got, you know, you really, but anyway, now we know. Marisa is in Potter's Bar. Marisa, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. I have a question.
Carry on.
Okay, so linked to the question about shellfish on the seabed,
yes.
Where does the saying, coming out of your shell, come from? And I wonder if it's linked...
Yeah, it could be.
...to...
I mean, that's a bit fruity. Really?
It's a bit risque, isn't it?
Well, it is now. I mean, I didn't know whether you were asking it from a risque perspective or whether you hadn't noticed the potential for double entendres in
Oh, no, I've...
Well, I presume it's got more to do with snails than with razor clams.
I mean, obviously, there's a thing about being shy and...
Yeah, but you come out of your shell, like a snail comes out of its shell to say hello. So you're in your shell. I think it's just from snails, isn't it?
So maybe I was going too deep.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that. I'm not even going to give myself a round of applause for this one. I don't know. Everyone loves a double entendre. Thank you, Marisa. It is. There's the joke I wanted. They're very good at doing scales. They see fish who love music. Well played, Nick. I like that one. I'm still going to miss out on loads. You've got, 12:54? We've got 4 or 5 minutes before Sheila gets here. If you can answer the question. We've done the shelf. Actually, maybe we've done more than I realised. We've only got the alarms left, the animals camouflaging themselves. Why are eggs sold in sixes? Why are eggs always sold in sixes or multiples of six? 03456060973. Then actually, we might clear the board, so I should shut up and carry on. Sarah is in chaos in Portugal. Have I pronounced that incorrectly? I think I asked you that last time.
You've pronounced it incorrectly twice so far.
Yes, well, I'm nothing if not consistent. I'm nothing if... How is it meant to be pronounced?
Shausch.
I prefer chaos. It'll always be chaos to me. Question or answer?
Chaos. It's an answer, James, to the alarm question.
Oh, lovely.
So there is a part of your mind called the reticular activating system, and it filters out the stuff that you need to be aware of and filters out the stuff you don't need to be aware of,
yes.
And filters in the stuff that you do need to be aware of.
Like your own snoring. The bloke on the bus this morning, I swear you could hear him from downstairs, and he was snoring on the top deck. Anyone who was on the E8 at the right time of the day will know exactly who I'm talking about. It was frankly extraordinary. E2, carry on.
Yeah, so the guy's wife doesn't need to hear his alarm because it's not relevant to her, and the other way around, so...
Well, it's the same noise, though.
It out.
It's the same noise.
Are you sure?
We picked up. So I think your answer might work because they've got one each on their bedside table and they have the same alarm tone. But the distance is the crucial bit here.
Yes, exactly. It's why you can sleep through a thunderstorm, but if you hear your dog or cat being sick, you'll be awake immediately. So it's the brain decides that noise is important, that noise isn't important, or it's when you want to buy a red Ford Fiesta, you start seeing them all over the place because you're concentrating on them.
Yeah, I like that. And then the reason why you filter one out and not the other is because it is a different sound because of the pitch, because it's closer to your ear than the other one is. So you've learned over the course of time to filter it out. I think you have put the cherry on the icing on the cake of my original answer. What are your qualifications?
I'm a remedial hypnotist.
I'm quite into this now. I think it really works what you do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like hypnotherapy, but I don't use a trance part because you don't need the trance set and people don't like it. So you just talk to the subconscious, find out what the problem is and fix it.
Indeedy doody. Round of applause for Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. 12:57 is the time. Sylvia is in Nottingham. Sylvia, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
To the eggs question, why are they sold in 6 and 12?
Oh, excellent.
Right? Yes. So, prior to decimalisation, 12 was the default number. 12 inches and a foot, 12 pennies in a shilling. So, I think it's just a throwback to that. Farage and Co. didn't get his hands on the number of eggs.
No, he's the other way around. I think he hates the metric system and wants to go back to the imperial system.
Yeah.
So he would like everything still to be measured in 12s.
Yes. So I think it goes back to that.
I think that's a wonderful answer.
Actually. Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. Imagine if they tried. What would they do as well? They'd sell them in fives, probably.
Yeah.
If they tried to metricate egg sales, five feels wrong. A lot of recipes people suggested go in doubles, but I can think of recipes that only use one egg. Is it cake? I've got qualifications, Sylvia?
I'm 78, so I lived through the decimalisation day, so I remember it well.
6 pennies, 12. I mean, it may have been that the price was linked to the number as well. So 6 for 6, 12 for 12. But you've got yourself a round of applause, Sylvia.
Oh, thank you.
Beautifully done. And that is it for another week. I think I am going to give the first ever James O'Brien Mystery Hour travel game. It's in a tin. Is going to go to the fish farmer. Was it Danny in Lewis? Because then, you know, next time he's got, when he's stopped working for the NGO and he's working for a fish farm again, he can send me some oysters. That's it from me for today. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app. If you want to get your hands on your own James O'Brien Mystery Hour travel game, it's in a tin, then you can go to mysteryhour.co.uk. You can get the LBC app and the Global Player app online as well. Put your news categories in the order you want, as well as download a range of podcasts, including the award-winning James O'Brien podcasts, which have picked up today, as you may or may not be aware. I'm very proud indeed to tell you that I have picked up the Global Player Peace Prize. Brackets, LBC mid-morning, weekdays only, show close brackets. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. At 3 today, another day, another bunch of appointments to the House of Lords. Mad, isn't it? So, why does it keep happening? An exclusive LBC report reveals the disturbing scale of child sexual abuse in this country. If the word sexual abuse makes you think only of migrants, then I urge you to pay very close attention to what our reporter has to say. But straight up after the news, I'm going to start with the flu. The long-feared flu surge is happening. The peak hasn't yet been reached, and I'm sorry if that language awakens COVID memories. Certainly did in me. The Prime Minister says there's no new guidance on anything from masking to whether to go to work or not. Just use common sense. But what is that? And just how much is COVID affecting your response to this flu surge?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told LBC there won't be a change to official guidance on wearing face masks despite a steep rise in flu cases. More than 2,600 people were in hospital in England with the virus every day last week. That's a rise of 55% compared to the previous 7 days. Sir Keir Starmer says there are precautions people can take to stop it spreading further.
We're not changing the guidance. There's been a lot of talk about face masks and whether we're changing the guidance. We're not changing that. But there are simple, common sense things that people can do in terms of measures to not sort of pass the flu on, if you like, particularly to vulnerable people, about ventilation, washing your hands, just keeping a bit of distance where you can. So we're not putting in extra guidance or rules or anything like that.
Last week, health officials said they would advise people with symptoms to wear a mask in public. The British Medical Association has played down the possibility of strikes by resident doctors in England being called off next week. The union says a new offer from the government doesn't offer anything on pay, which is part of the dispute. The main concession from ministers is an expansion of specialist training posts. Police believe 1.2 million children may have been sexually abused last year. New figures show a huge increase in the amount of crimes happening online. LBC has been told, despite a focus on grooming gangs, family members and other children are responsible for most of the offences reported. Richard Fuchs, who heads up the Hydrant Child Safety Programme, says there are different forms of abuse.
What we often see in terms of children offending against other children or child on child, and that is where it might take place at a party or an event of that type. And it's important that we understand those different typologies, because the responses to each have nuances, and they have differences in terms of how both policing, our partners and the wider system has to deal with them.
A former MP and council leader has defected from the Conservatives to Reform UK. Ben Bradley, who lost his Mansfield seat last year, has been appointed as Reform's head of local government action. And the Women's Tennis Association has announced a long-running deal with Mercedes-Benz. It will see £37 million handed over to help with the tour's commitment to have equal prize money for men and women by 2027. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 points at 96.63. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather mostly dry this afternoon with a mixture of cloud and bright spells. Rain moving into the northwest, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
It's the most important time of the year. Festive Sarnie season. So let's get serious. And Subway knows there's only one way to do it. The Subway. Start off with a sage and onion stuffing top bread. Yep, you heard it. Stuffing. Bread. Succulent rotisserie style chicken. Crispy bacon. Cheese and toasted, of course. If stuffing bread wasn't enough, how about even more stuffing? All that with a hearty drizzle of cranberry sauce. Told you we were serious. Get serious with the unrivaled ultimate festive sandwich. Now at Subway.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I'm almost afraid to ask, have you got your flu jab? Have you had your flu jab? I know some people get it automatically and are offered it by their GP surgeries, depending on their age, depending on their needs. Most of us, though, pay a fee to get a flu jab. I did a few weeks ago. Haven't had a COVID jab yet this year. Might do still, haven't decided, but I definitely got my flu jab early on, about a month ago. This surge that's happening, it is bringing out conversation that is very reminiscent, isn't it, of the time of COVID, when we talked a lot about vaccination. Of course, we talked a lot about the urgency of getting vaccinated. We talked about masking, keeping your distance from people when you're ill, that kind of thing. People typically don't have COVID tests now. If you have some that are still valid at home, I'm sure you take a COVID test if you get a heavy cold or you think you might have those symptoms. So, you know, it lingers on a bit, doesn't it? And it's still killing people, COVID, you know, but it was always going to, in the way that flu does as well, particularly those who are more vulnerable, the elderly, for example, but not just the elderly. But this surge that's happening, an average of 2,660 patients a day, we learnt this morning, were in hospital with the flu in England last week. These are figures from last week, the highest ever for this time of year, and up 55% on the figures from the week before. at this wave of so-called super flu is leaving the NHS facing, you know, even more pressure than it already does in winter, as you would imagine. We've kind of been aware that this was likely coming because of what had happened in Australia to them in their winter earlier this year. No peak in sight yet, though. NHS England saying there are now enough flu patients to fill more than three whole hospital trusts. I could give you the granular data, but I'm sure you don't want to hear it, particularly at this point. You might have heard a bit in the news there from Keir Starmer. Let's hear a bit more of it. He was speaking to LBC's East of England reporter Shivani Sharma at a bus depot in Norwich.
Prime Minister, we know you're talking today about making trains and public transport and buses more affordable for people, but we also know that buses and trains can be a hotbed for illnesses. How concerned are you at today's worst-case scenario warning from the NHS on flu cases? And should we be encouraging people to wear masks on public transport? And should we be encouraging people to not mix in the run-up to Christmas?
Well, obviously, flu is a challenge every year, and so it is this year. And we've got a winter plan in place, and I go through that with the Health Secretary. I had his team in just 2 days ago to go through where we're at, what's the preparation. They're working really hard. So far as the guidance is concerned for people, we're not changing the guidance. There's been a lot of talk about face masks and whether we're changing the guidance. We're not changing that. But there are simple, common sense things that people can do in terms of measures to not sort of pass the flu on, if you like, particularly to vulnerable people, about ventilation, washing your hands, just keeping a bit of distance where you can. So we're not putting in extra guidance or rules or anything like that, but we are asking people to use their common sense, as most people will, and nobody really wants to pass the flu to somebody at Christmas time. And so courteous common sense approach will make a big difference.
Yeah, courteous common sense. I mean, there's a few things to consider, aren't there, as well as courteous common sense and masking. I mean, I was on a busy train this morning and nobody was masking, which is fine. There was nobody obviously ill there. But I think culturally we're resistant to masking, aren't we, in this country? Perhaps in certain settings we might be okay about it. But I think in the normal run of our lives, I think we've had it with masking. That would be my reading of how most people feel. Be keen to hear how you feel about this and whether the, you know, the kind of, is it trauma? It will be for some people, not for others, but the memory of COVID. Is that informing how you respond to these calls to get vaccinated or calls to potentially even wear a mask, not from the Prime Minister there, but to wear a mask on a train, on a bus or in a crowded place if you or someone else is ill? It hasn't become part of our culture post-COVID, has it? In the way that we've seen it happen in Southeast Asia, for example, when they had their experiences with MERS and with SARS, and obviously same as us with COVID as well. Have you had your vaccination? What kind of information is out there for you? Because I do think people are still confused about whether you pay for your flu vaccination, how much that costs. If you want a COVID vaccination, how much that costs, or whether you get it free. There's all kinds of back and forth on